News. I'm Corey Morris. The independent probe of the Space Shuttle Columbia disaster earlier this year is now blasting years of alleged inadequacies at NASA. More from correspondent Terry Moore.
In a 250-page final report, the Columbia Accident Investigation Board cites a series of complex missteps that led to the shuttle's disintegration during reentry February 1st. All seven astronauts aboard the spacecraft perished. The report cites the space shuttle program's history and culture, including years of cost-cutting, cutting corners, and scheduling pressures. The report identifies faulty organization and analysis procedures, also flawed communications. The physical cause of the shuttle disaster was previously identified. A large piece of insulation foam broke off during liftoff and damaged the wing. I'm Terry Moore in Washington.
President Bush will be in the Midwest today. He'll be addressing members of the American Legion in St. Louis. And while he is expected to do a fair amount of cheerleading for the war in Iraq, the death now of yet another American soldier there could undermine those efforts. Correspondent Lori Yama has details.
A U.S. soldier in a convoy in the northwest Iraqi town of Hamariya has died after a bomb exploded. This brings the post-war Iraq death toll to 139. That's one more than the number of troops killed before U.S. President George Bush declared major combat operations over in Iraq. U.S. troops have stormed a northern Iraqi town trying to smash a gang they say is responsible for gun running, murder, and a bombing outside a police station that killed one American. A U.S. military officer says two dozen gang members were captured, but not the gang's leader, known as Latif. Laura Iyama, Washington.
Airline pilots who say the government's moving too slowly on the flight deck officer program are holding news conferences at airports around the country today. The Airline Pilot Security Alliance says the Bush administration needs to speed up getting guns in cockpits to prevent any more September 11th-style hijackings. Since the government started arming pilots following the attacks, only 200 have been certified to carry weapons on commercial flights.
Okay, so I'm a teenager, right? And everyone's so quick to judge me. On the outside, I may look like... But on the inside, I'm all... Just because I look like... Doesn't mean I act that way. In fact, I'm actually involved in crime prevention. That sounds more like this. It's really a great way to convince adults that while you may be looking... You're really thinking.
Call 1-800-722-TEENS to find out how to make your community a safer place for everyone. Get involved. Get the number and call. 1-800-722-TEENS. A public service message from the Crime Prevention Coalition of America, the U.S. Department of Justice, and the Ad Council.
The American Civil Liberties Union and other advocacy groups say the government's new air passenger screening system violates Americans' privacy. The ACLU calls the CAPS II system a, quote, quantum leap in government surveillance. The system uses a passenger's private information to search several databases to determine if that person is a security threat. Fox News won't pursue its trademark infringement suit against satirist Al Franken. The suit stemmed from the use of the phrase fair and balanced on the cover of Franken's new book. Just last week, a judge dismissed the suit entirely, saying it was without any legal merit.
Mom, Dad,
someone's going to try and get me to take drugs.
Want to do something about it?
You're going to have to make me tell you where I am and who I'm with every day.
Don't like the sound of that?
Tuck, you got to be the grown-up.
Kids with involved parents are less likely to try drugs. So ask them, who, what, where, when? Questions. They're the anti-drug. Call 1-800-788-2800 for more information. Sponsored by the ONDCP and the Partnership for a Drug-Free America.
The federal government's budget deficit could now top $500 billion, according to the Congressional Budget Office. The White House Office of Budget and Management had already predicted a deficit topping $475 billion, and that estimate didn't include the continuing costs for the war in Iraq. Details from correspondent Priscilla Huff.
The numbers are mind-boggling. A deficit of more than $500 billion U.S. in 2004. The U.S. federal government is on track to set a record in dollar amounts for deficits. $1.4 billion U.S. in debt over the next decade by one estimate, more than $3.7 billion U.S. by another. Republicans insist that the number is less significant because the economy is larger, making the deficit a smaller portion of the gross domestic product. However, Democrats worry as economic growth and tax revenues have slowed, spending has increased, especially for the reconstruction of post-war Iraq and the rebuilding of Afghanistan. Priscilla Huff, Washington.
And I'm Corey Morris, and this is IE America Radio Network News.
I'm Bobby Likas with today's Car Clinic Minute. What you don't see can't hurt you, right? Neighborly ghosts and friendly spirits aside, think again. What you can't see can kill you. When I come back, I'll tell you all about it. Hi, I'm Bobby Likas. Every summer, callers on the Car Clinic Network ask what's causing that odor when I turn on my air conditioner. And the answer? Bacterial growth in the AC system. The good news is there's an ingenious process from BG Products that cleans and disinfects your entire ventilation system without having to dismantle it. You'll breathe easier with a BG ventilation service, and your car will smell like new. To find a shop that performs this service, go to bgfindashop.com. That's bgfindashop.com. Conventional wisdom says ignorance is bliss. But colorless, odorless, and tasteless carbon gases, together with visible byproducts of pollution, harm health and environment. Enter Walbro Corporation's Smart Tank, the industry's first electronically managed fuel storage and delivery system. What this means to consumers and to citizens of planet Earth is harmful vapor collection and carbon vapor storage within the tank itself, while providing fuel pressure as demanded by your onboard computer, saving gas. That's one green machine, saving cash and the planet. I'm Bobby Likas. Likas, you'll love us.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
He's been written about in the Wall Street Journal, the New York Times, and Pravda. He spent time with the Pope and the Dalai Lama. And now you can talk with Tom Hartman simply by calling 1-800-TALK-YES. Here's Tom Hartman.
Welcome to our program today. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Greetings, patriots from coast to coast on the IE America Radio Network. Also streaming live from outer space, our signal coming down from the Sirius radio satellite system, or satellite radio system, and also streaming live on the internet from radiopower.org, ieamericaradio.com, live365.com, and with live archives at whiterosesociety.org. My friend Scott, the astrologer, is... several of my friends who are into astrology are very concerned isn't the right word, just interested. Here we have tomorrow the planet Mars closer to the Earth than it's been in tens of thousands of years, or will be again in 40 to 60,000 years, something like that. And then on Thursday, Mercury goes retrograde. Those of you who follow this kind of stuff know that that means... things that you start during that time period, and it's about 3.5 weeks, I believe, after Thursday, tend not to work out well. It's a good time, they say, astrologers. I don't know anything about this stuff myself. It's not my thing, but I find it fascinating. I actually have a publisher who, when Mercury goes retrograde, sometimes actually doesn't even answer the telephone. So this starts on Thursday. Mars is close. Mars, the planet of war, is closed tomorrow and Thursday, and some folks are saying this is a bad thing. Who knows? Maybe it's, certainly there's going to be strange energy in the air. Examine Reality posted a question in our chat room, and by the way, if you'd like to drop in and meet with the folks in the chat room, just go on, and you're live on the internet, just go to TomHartmanShow.com. And click on the chat room link. That'll take you to the trade form on CompuServe. Click the chat button there, and boom, you're in. And Examine Reality says, okay, here's a question, maybe not for today, but here goes. You recently pointed out that one of the platforms of, I forget the name of the party in Texas, was to promote inflation. That was actually the People's Party is what it was called. It was the populist group. Was to promote inflation in order to devalue the amount of money that they owned because of the size of their debts. I notice that this year's U.S. deficit is approaching $0.5 trillion, and that the 10-year debt projections are between $1.4 and $3.7 trillion. Do you think that the government will have to promote inflation in order to manage their debt and the Social Security obligations? By the way, I enjoy listening to your program because it gives me a lot to think about later on. Thank you, Examine Reality. the answer to your question. Yes, absolutely. One of the things that has historically helped inflation, one of the things that has historically driven inflation, is that those who is that the government, when the government is in a debtor position, which we have been in largely since World War II, that when the government is in a debtor position, it benefits because you borrow money at one value and you pay it off at a lower value. Inflation, while most people think of inflation meaning things getting more expensive, what inflation really means is that the value of the currency is going down. It takes more dollars to buy the same thing, which means that the dollar is worth less. And but you know, on the one hand, it could be that the way that they'll deal with this is, you know, Greenspan will get together with these guys and they'll say, well, okay, let's engage in some monetary policy that will encourage inflation. There are a number of things that can influence inflation, and the Fed is one of them. But odds are they're not going to have to, and this is what Greenspan has been worrying out loud about recently. And that is that as the debt of the United States government goes up, there's only a certain amount of cash out there floating around on the planet that people are willing to loan to those who want to borrow it. And the big borrowers are, in descending order of significance, number one, corporations. Corporations borrow enormous amounts of money. And one of the reasons is because it's tax deductible, the interest on it, and they grow their businesses with borrowed money. Number two, you have governments borrowing money to finance their debts. Number three, you have individuals borrowing money, primarily in the United States, in home mortgages, which also are tax deductible. So what happens is you've got, you know, all this borrowed money has to be borrowed from somebody, which means borrowing money from people who have cash sitting around. And there's not that much cash and there's not that many people. There is a finite limit. And so as the government borrows more and more money, that will make it increasingly more difficult for corporations to borrow money because there's a competition for the lenders. There's competition for the people who have the cash who can give it to you and when you borrow it. And what happens is that when that competition starts heating up, as it has in the past in the United States, in times, for example, during the Vietnam War, we went into huge deficit spending and generated debts in order to pay for the war. And we ended up with a situation under Nixon where you know, inflation rates were 15, 16, 18%, interest rates, rather. Inflation rate was substantially up there. So what will happen is, as these debts of the federal government continue to increase, and they clearly are, Bush's policy of thinking, number one, that by giving rich people more money, and it's not letting them keep more of their own money, and it's not reducing taxes, it's deferring taxes. He's borrowing this money in the world marketplace of cash to hand it to the wealthiest among us who contribute disproportionately to Republican campaigns. I mean, this, in my mind, this is all about the 2004 election. That by having these tax deferrals that he calls tax cuts, where he's giving all this money to these extremely wealthy people, what's happening is that the United States government is borrowing this money. It's going to be more and more difficult to get that for corporations and for individuals who want to borrow money, to borrow money. And we're seeing this now. Home mortgage rates are starting to go up. Corporate interest rates are going up. And the amount of interest that the federal government itself will have to pay, because it's competing in the marketplace for this cash, will go up. In other words, lenders are going to say, hey, our money's becoming more and more valuable. If you want it, you're going to have to pay a higher price. And that will drive up interest rates, which will then trigger inflation. So it's one of these, you know, dog chasing its tail kind of things. And Bush has been playing a very, very dangerous game. A very dangerous game. On the one hand, by promoting the tax policy and business policy that he has, he's been setting up a situation that, in fact, could cause deflation. Because instead of giving money to average working people, like John Kennedy did with his tax cut, yes, Kennedy dropped the top marginal rate from over 70% down to around 50%, as I recall, or maybe it was over 90% down to 70%. Anyway, there's about a 20% drop at the top marginal rate. But as Kennedy pointed out in his speech about this, the vast majority of wealthy people, and he was one of them, he should know, were not paying that top rate because there were thousands of tax loopholes that have been built into the tax code over the years just for those rich people. So what he did was he closed up all those loopholes and he dropped the top rate. So the net effect on the most wealthy was that there was really not that substantial a tax cut. But he made substantial tax cuts for the lower and lower middle class people. And the result of this was a stimulation of the economy. Well, Bush, on the other hand, has given this cash back to wealthy people, but anybody making under $100,000 is getting essentially nothing, nothing of any consequence. And so he's not stimulating the economy in a way that actually works during a time of economic crisis. Now, people say, but the stock market's going up. Well, yeah, what he did was he reduced the interest rate on money that you make on dividends down to 15%. It used to be if you made your living sitting around getting dividend checks, you had to pay as if you made your living digging ditches. You had to pay the same income tax rate. But he cut that from a peak rate of, 34%, 32% down to 15%. So what that does is it makes stocks a more attractive investment. So the price of stocks go up. People are competing for investments. But that does not mean that corporations are healthier. It does not mean that the economy is healthier. It simply means that those people who put their money into stocks will see some appreciation of that, and those people who are wealthy enough that they can derive their income from dividend payments, that is, profits that are distributed by corporations to their stockholders, will have a lower tax rate. So he's playing this very dangerous game in that, on the one hand, he's got this situation set up where people are not encouraged to purchase. The economy is not being given the kind of stimulus that will cause real economic growth, not this artificial stuff, this facade of economic growth of the stock market, but real economic growth, like jobs. He's not doing that. So he's risking deflation. Yeah, deflation and the Great Depression are words that are usually synonymous. So he's risking that. And so to get out of the risk of deflation, after hearing Alan Greenspan squeal about it for 2 years, he kicks into this massive federal debt program, which, if there wasn't the risk of deflation, would represent a huge risk for inflation. And he's hoping that he can walk down the middle, that on the one hand he can have the deflationary pressure of fewer and fewer jobs and an eroding economy where more and more money is going to the wealthy and powerful at the top, but less and less is going to the middle class, and we're wiping out the middle class and creating a much, much larger working poor class on the one hand. So this deflationary drive us into a Great Depression thing on the one hand that he's creating with his policies. And then on the other hand, he's creating this inflationary pressure by borrowing, 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 and the lenders are going to say, hey, you know, you want our money, it's going to cost you more, and it's already happening. And so he's hoping he can walk down the middle. You know, I've written 6 or 7 books on attention deficit disorder, and I'm not changing the subject here. And it seems that there are a lot of folks who for their ADD take stimulant drugs. They take speed, you know, Ritalin, dextroamphetamine, methamphetamine, whatnot. And they take speed during the day, and then they can't sleep at night, so they take downers at night. They take sleeping pills. So you've got them going up during the day and down during the night using drugs. This is the same thing that George Bush is doing with the economy. And I think most of us know, and common sense would indicate, that rather than taking uppers to get up and downers to get down, it's, you know, really healthier just to follow the middle way, you know, to do neither. And if Bush had not pursued a policy that would throw this government into recession and possibly even depression, as he did in the first 2 years of his presidency. And if he had not then also pursued a policy, both of these policies have huge payoffs for the most rich among us in the United States, pursued a policy that could create inflation, then we wouldn't have this dynamic of speed and downers at the same time. But, you know, it's sort of like it's like the Hell's Angels, you know, taking methamphetamine and drinking at the same time. And this is what this guy's doing with our economy. So anyhow, long answer there, examine reality. I hope it wasn't too much of a digression. Let's get to the news. We'll do that right after this break. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Stay tuned.
Nice drive, Jim.
Thanks. You know, I wish my business plan was as straight. We just can't grow anymore with our current facility. I've looked at the price to build, but I'm afraid to spend the money.
Jim, I've known you since you've started your business. You succeeded because you made tough decisions and took risks.
Well...
Look, I had the same problem, but I called General Steel Corporation. The general helped me build my new office and warehouse, and I stayed within my budget. I couldn't believe the time and money I saved compared to traditional construction.
That's a steel building?
It sure is, but with the stucco and rock products provided by the general, you just can't tell. They engineered the building for this area and to fit my needs. When the economy rebounds, I'll be ready to gain market share.
Save time and money with a General Steel building. Call toll-free 1-866-96-STEEL. Whether you need a 40 by 60 for under $13,000 or a 60 by 200 for under $49,000, call 1-866-96-STEEL. If you need space, you need the General. Call 1-866-96-STEEL today.
Mom, Dad,
someone's going to try and get me to take drugs.
Want to do something about it?
You're going to have to make me tell you where I am and who I'm with every day.
Don't like the sound of that?
Tough. You got to be the grown-up.
Kids with involved parents are less likely to try drugs. So ask them, who, what, where, when. Questions. They're the anti-drug.
Call 1-800-729-6686 for more information. Paid for by Office of National Drug Control Policy.
Looking for a different way to get relief from sore muscles or achy joints? Now you can get fast, targeted relief from a name you trust. Try new Bare Muscle and Joint Cream. It targets the pain precisely. Just rub it in right where it hurts. New Bare Muscle and Joint Cream actually increases circulation at the site of pain to soothe that achy soreness fast. Take aim at the pain with a name you trust. Try new Bare Muscle and Joint Cream and get moving again, pain-free. Use as directed.
If you're looking for the latest in cutting-edge technology and the products that everyone is talking about, tune into tomorrow right here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Pacific. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the highly interactive radio program with experts featuring the latest in consumer electronics, technology, computers, and the Internet. We cover all things cool, like digital photography and video, home theater and audio, home automation, gadgets and gizmos, the technology of making music, computer peripherals, HDTV, DVD, MP3s, car audio, navigation and security, and lots more. If it draws current, we talk about it. Let us bring you into tomorrow. Check out our website anytime at graveline.com and join us this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific, here on the IE America Radio Network.
Prepare to be astonished.
Okay, so just what is going on here, people?
Did you know that you can get the best of Progressive Talk Radio on Sirius Satellite Radio Stream 145?
Oh, really?
Well, that's remarkable.
Monday through Friday on Sirius Satellite Radio Stream 145 is loaded with political talk radio from the other side.
Hurrah!
Kick it off your morning with Doug Steffens' Good Day from 5 a.m. till noon Eastern Time, followed by the Tom Hartman Show from noon to 3 p.m. Then get different perspectives from different show hosts on Radio Free Speed Zone from 3 to 5 p.m.
Yeah, okay, that sounds good.
Family Talk with Dr. Mike Riera then takes the reins from 5 p.m. till 7, followed by All American Talk Radio from 7 p.m. till 9. Then get ready to fire up your night with the Mike Malloy Show from 9 p.m. till midnight Eastern Standard Time, all live Monday through Friday on Sirius Satellite Radio Stream 145, powered by the only progressive talk radio network, IE America Radio Network.
So what do you want, a medal?
Well, isn't that special?
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
Hold a knife to my throat, to my head a pistol. I never voted for Bill Kristol. Tar me and feather me, take my girl. I never voted for Richard Pearl. I don't care what it is, I will step right in it before I'd vote for Bill Bennett. They'll take over the world if we let 'em. They'd like to take over the world. I'm not kidding.
Oh, boy. And are we going to let them? As of today, this is day 198 of the search for weapons of mass destruction, day 714 of the search for that man whose name shall not pass the lips of George W. Bush, a.k.a. Osama bin Laden, a total today of 277 U.S. soldiers have died in Iraq, 139 since George Bush did his stunt landing. It wasn't even his stunt landing. Since the pilot flying George Bush, we need to start being accurate in our language. Bush was just a passenger on that airplane. Since the pilot flying George Bush onto the USS Abraham made that stunt landing, 139 Americans have died. 138 had died before that. One more has now died since then than before that. Very, very sobering and serious numbers. This is a real problem. And now, according to the Washington Post, a huge PR campaign has been launched by the Bush administration. They got Donald Rumsfeld and Condoleezza Rice out on the road. On the road again. You may remember the 103rd VFW meeting, which was last year this time, was where Vice President Dick Cheney spoke. And really, you know, launched the blitz for the war in Iraq. He said, and I quote, this was Dick Cheney, simply stated, there is no doubt that Saddam Hussein now has weapons of mass destruction. There is no doubt that he is amassing them to use against our friends, against our allies, and against us. End quote. Well, 1 year later to the day, I believe, 1 year later to the week, certainly, Donald Rumsfeld and Condoleezza Rice are there speaking to the VFW. I would love to be a mouse in the corner of that room because veterans, by and large, can see through smoke screens and obfuscation and those other words that aren't quite so appropriate on the radio. 1-800-TALK-YES is our number, 1-800-825-5937, and Jim in Cleveland's on the line. Jim, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Good afternoon, sir.
Hey, Jim.
I was curious about a couple of things. You know, here we have a president that was installed under very questionable circumstance, and yet he has gone on an all-out assault on the American working families. I mean, just an absolute attack. The first thing he did was, you know, cancel out or change the ergonomic laws, trying to destroy the unions. And he really is still accountable to the American people, meaning that he still has to go through an election.
And yeah, we've got about 30 seconds here, Jim.
Kind of makes me wonder, with him slapping the Americans in the face, if he gets reelected, he's not going to be accountable to anyone. And it makes me wonder what they've got planned for the future. And I'll just hang up. And have you done a special on dry drunk syndrome? And I'll just hang up. Thanks.
Yeah, okay. Jim, thank you. Thank you, Jim in Cleveland. Good questions. And these are, let me give you my thoughts on these when we come back from the break. Thanks. You timed that just perfectly, Jim. These are real, real good questions. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. I'll give you some answers, Jim. And Kodak, hang on in South Carolina. We'll be with you right after the break also. Stay tuned.
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament? How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements? And what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
This is the Tom Hartman program on the IE America Radio Network.
Mm-hmm. For the IE America Radio Network, this is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm John Hamilton.
So far, Walmart has been able to successfully defeat all attempts to unionize its workforce, but the world's largest retailer may have finally run into a force it cannot overcome, the government of China. Walmart has 28 stores in 12 Chinese cities, and the state-supervised All-China Federation of Trade Unions is demanding that Walmart let workers organize. According to Chinese law, if more than three workers at any business want to join a union, the business is obligated to let all workers join. For its part, Walmart claims it has such a good relationship with its workers around the world that there's no need for a union, China included.
A Poor People's March from Mississippi arrived on the National Mall in Washington, D.C. this week, where members of the Kensington Welfare Rights Union are calling on the Bush administration to provide health care, food, affordable housing, and living wage jobs to poor Americans. The group set up a tent city dubbed Bushville, similar to the Hoovervilles of the Great Depression. The encampment wasn't popular among D.C. police, who on Sunday morning arrested 17 protesters and dispersed the camp. Sherry Honkala, director of the Kensington Welfare Rights Union, says her group will continue to protest until social services cut under the Bush administration are restored and expanded.
Now we're living during a period in history where we no longer have those entitlements. With the elimination of welfare in our country, the cutbacks in every social service program, with a focus on military spending as opposed to human needs, we're really in trouble if we don't begin to get out and build a massive movement calling for economic human rights in our country.
The Poor People's March on Washington will continue through August 29th.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Animal Talk, not your father's radio show about animals.
Welcome to Lifestyles of the Wet and Stinky. We're looking at fishy fat cats and wealthy crustaceans. This is Bloodsucking Leech here, sending you algae-covered wishes and caviar-laying dreams.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights on the IE America Radio Network.
All right, boys, come on.
Greetings, everybody. This is Ramsey Pollard, Jr., the host of IE America's Sunday afternoon travel show, Ramblin' with Ramsey, on air 5 to 7 p.m. Eastern Time. Almost every Sunday, I travel to some location to offer you the opportunity of not only receiving wonderful printed material about the location, but to win a prize, maybe a couple of nights in a hotel or a resort or T-shirts or fudge. Oh, yes, there's always a lot of fudge. Come on, tune us in on your radio or go to IEAmericaRadio.com. I'll be there.
The best of the rest of the news. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Boil me in oil, cast me into hell. I'd never vote for Dan Quayle. More scary than Brainy. I did not vote for Dick Cheney. Got a cat named Fluffy. I keep a dog named Reagan. Now who the hell is Robert Kagan? They'll take over the world if we let them. They'd like to take over the world. I'm not kidding.
And welcome back. It's Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. What is the true history of the conservative philosophy, and is that history hostile to democracy? I want to get into this issue in this hour and perhaps part of the next. And Jim in Cleveland offered the perfect opening for it. First of all, Jim, with regard to Bush being a dry drunk, I don't think that it's real useful. I mean, not setting aside issues of morality or good manners or any of that kind of stuff, I don't think it's real useful for us to be speculating about his psychological condition. And I say this as somebody who's on the roster with the state of Vermont as a psychotherapist and, you know, visiting faculty at Goddard College and writing books about psychiatry and psychology. we could have had the same discussion about whether or not Bill Clinton's a sex addict. It's everybody has their unique challenges. And I think one of the illnesses of our society is to try to psychoanalyze things to death. As one of the folks in our chat room pointed out, to use dry drunk as a slander term, not, I don't mean literally slander, but a put down toward Bush, is there's a lot of recovering alcoholics out there who hear that and feel slapped. Now, I realize AA in AA, dry drunk is a put down term, but most people out in the rest of the world don't realize that. And so I think it's probably I think it's much more appropriate for us to focus in on what this man is doing to this country, the harms that he and his policies and his advisors are causing to this country. Very specifically identify them, call him on them, offer viable, positive, optimistic alternatives, and move forward from there. And as to your question about, what happens if he gets reelected and he's not accountable, well, he'll be as accountable, first of all, as any lame duck president is, as Bill Clinton was in his second term. That is, he's accountable to his party. He doesn't want to create enormous damage. But, I think that what he's going to do is just more of the same. What you're going to see is the conservative agenda writ large. I mean, one of the nice things about the Bush administration is that they haven't been speaking. They have been saying one thing and doing another. Their Clean Skies Initiative is really an air pollution act, dirty. But it's all pretty much out there for you to see. Anybody with any sense can figure out what these guys are up to. And they're not at all embarrassed about it. They don't try to hide it particularly. I mean, they've got their nice little catchphrases, their Orwellian language, but it's conspicuous. And I think we're just going to see more of that, more of the same. 1-800-TALK-YES is our number, 1-800-825-5937, and Kodak in South Carolina is on the line. Welcome to the Tom Hartman Program, Kodak.
Yes, good morning. Good afternoon, Tom.
Hey,
yes,
Kodak, the last time you called, I called you Kodiak, didn't I? I think we had a typo on the screen here, and it's stuck in my head. So, thank you.
Yeah, if Kodak, get the picture.
Yeah, got it.
Yeah, in conjunction with the other caller, that's calling George Bush a dry drunk. That is a tactic that they use. We, as defenders of liberty, we need to arm ourselves with the facts. And then in an even calm tone, we need to be able to dispute these so-called these passionate conservative viewpoints that have nothing to do with being compassionate.
And they have little to do with being conservative either, by the way.
Right. And the other thing that I called about is instead of this administration sending the FBI into a foreign land to look for the trace evidence of money that is coming from, that is supporting these extremist radical groups, they need to send the FBI right over to the Defense Department and track down that $138 million that it was in the news today that they have once again lost.
Well, they're well over a trillion now that they've been unable to account for over the last 20 years or so.
Exactly. So that is more of a threat to national security, as far as I'm concerned, than any terrorist.
Yeah, and a lot of that money is represented by missing stuff, like missing tanks, missing missiles, missing...
Right.
I mean, we've lost it. Yeah,
right.
You're right, Kodak.
Ridiculous. I mean, if they can't run... Well, anyway, I don't want to stray too far from the point, but I had to get that off my chest.
Yeah.
Thanks for the format. And
good one.
You all have a great day. Thanks a lot.
Okay. Thanks, Kodak. Thanks for calling. And keep that truck going straight. Is the true history of the conservative philosophy hostile to democracy? I want to get into this in just a few minutes. We've got one more call here. Jim in Michigan's on the line. Thanks, Jim, for calling 1-800-TALK-YES. Welcome to the Tom Hartman Program. You're on the air.
Yeah, hello. You were talking about Nixon's inflation.
Right.
Well, don't forget, the Republicans later blamed that inflation on Jimmy Carter. Nixon.
Oh, yeah.
I can remember the wage price controls being put in by Nixon, which meant all our wages all got frozen, but all the new products, the manufacturers have ways of getting around price controls by introducing new products or modifying existing ones. But Nixon had wage price controls. Jerry Ford, he was handing out these win buttons, whip inflation now.
Yep.
But Carter got the blame. How about Vietnam, maybe? War is inflationary.
Yeah.
And they try to blame that on Carter, which is just absolutely gross.
Yeah, war when it's fought with borrowed money is inflationary, as is anything else.
The great irony, though, that about Nixon, probably the greatest irony I can think of here, was Nixon running as a peace candidate with the secret plan. Nixon beat Humphrey running as a peace candidate. And that's what got me off my butt.
Yeah.
Nixon was Eisenhower's man. I respected Eisenhower. You know, we all liked Ike.
Yep.
So I kind of like carried over. But when Nixon came in, it opened my eyes, and I realized Republicans are no good.
Well, you know, you read the history of it, and Ike didn't trust Nixon.
No.
You know, Eisenhower had huge reservations about Nixon and shuttled him off to run the Cuba policy there in 58, in large part to kind of get him out of his hair when the revolution was happening in Cuba or when Castro was starting his stuff. And Eisenhower, you know, wrote and talked privately at some length about this. And then about, what, it was 9 months before the end of his term, Eisenhower had a heart attack, and there was the period there where he was basically not really the president. Nixon was, although nobody knew it because they kept it covered up, mostly. And Nixon just was, you know, grabbing power left and right. And it was scary. It was bizarre. But
tried blaming that inflation on Carter.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's the thing that the cons do. And I frankly, I'm not willing to indict Republicans wholesale because I think that there are some good Republicans out there. We had Jim DePesso on from Republicans for Environmental Protection, you know, they're going full tilt boogie against this administration, trying to stop them from the damage they're doing. Yeah, but I think that the cons really, you know, the cons like, you know, Limbaugh and all of these guys, they want to be able to have it both ways. They want to say like you say, oh, the inflation that started under Nixon is Jimmy Carter's fault. So, you know, when a Democrat comes into office, whatever they have or do, if it's bad, it's their fault, and if it's good, it's something that they inherited. I mean, this is just, I mean, they're still bashing Bill Clinton for anything that's bad in America, and they refuse to acknowledge him for anything that's good. And
I can remember some lady, when I used to listen to NPR 2 or 3 years ago, talking about how Hillary and Clinton are going to be badmouthed by the Republicans, you know, as long as they're in office. And I tried calling up, wasn't able to get through, but I wanted to say, as long as they're in office, good grief, Kennedy's been dead in the grave for 35 years, and they're still bad-mouthing him. You know what I mean?
It'll continue. The dark side
of Camelot.
Yeah, as long as there is a positive icon associated with the Democrats, the Republicans will kick him around.
Okay.
But, you know, the Democrats will do the same things to the Republicans. Democrats are still kicking around Nixon, like you and me having this conversation here.
This is a matter of history. This is a matter of public record.
Yeah.
Okay.
Great. Thanks, Jim. Thanks for the call. I appreciate it. U.S. expert, this is a scary one. There's a guy by the name of Jack Pritchard. You've probably never heard of Jack Pritchard. Jack Pritchard is one of the high-ranking officials in the State Department who is one of our North Korea experts. And Jack Pritchard has been arguing in this administration that they need to negotiate with North Korea directly and that we need to offer North Korea incentives. Because these people are starving, right? I mean, we've got two choices. We can, number one, knock them out and go in and take over their country and have another country where we need 150,000 soldiers and another country where we need to be spending a few billion dollars a month to resurrect them from the ashes, which, you know, there's not much of a consensus for right now in Washington, D.C. Or we need to throw them some bones. We need to give them some of our table scraps so that, you know, a few fewer people will starve to death. And in exchange for that, they'll put their nuclear program on hold like they did for the years of the Clinton administration, because this was the deal that Bill Clinton worked out with them. And Jack Pritchard has been the one advocating this. And yesterday, I believe it was yesterday, it might have been this morning, he resigned. And this is just what, a week before we're going to start our negotiations with North Korea, with China and Russia, these Six Nation talks? He resigned from the State Department. This is a bad sign, folks. This is spooky. And in Bombay, 52 people are now dead. It was a little strange for me. I was watching TV the other night, watching the news on CNN, and here's this picture of this, what's called the arch, or the, I forget the name of the gate, the gateway to Bombay. And it's actually right on the edge of the ocean. And the last time Louise and I were in Bombay, we stayed in the Intercontinental Hotel, which looks out onto this thing. So we stayed right, 15 feet from where the bomb went off. And this appears to be the Hindu-Muslim thing going on. And here we've got two nuclear powers that are about to have a religious war. They're just inches from it. And this is, again, one of the big underreported stories, is the incredible tension between India and Pakistan over these issues. And finally, to kind of wrap up in the news here today, yesterday it was revealed that the White House had forced the EPA to lie to New Yorkers about the levels of asbestos and other toxins that were in the air after, at Ground Zero after 9/11. For example, one of the initial drafts, the early drafts of the EPA study, pointed out that the levels of asbestos in the air around 9/11, around the Ground Zero, were three or more times higher than federal standards allow. And the White House required them to change that language to say, quote, slightly above the 1% trigger for defining asbestos material, end quote. And the White House required them to insert a sentence that said, quote, our tests show it is safe for New Yorkers to go back to work in New York's financial district, end quote, although the EPA had no such tests that indicated that. So the question then has been, well, who in the White House was responsible for the EPA telling these lies? Turns out it was a guy named James Connaughton. And who is James Connaughton? He's a member of the Bush administration, brought in by George W. And before he came into this administration and to work in the White House, he was a lawyer who represented corporations being sued on asbestos claims. Can you believe it? See, you don't. This is why I say, you know, we don't need to get into whether or not George Bush is a dry drunk or not. Just look at this stuff. I mean, this is just incredible. 1-800-TALK-YES is our number. Raymond in Cement City, Michigan's on the line. Raymond, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Well, good afternoon, Tom.
Hey.
Just thought I'd give you a little call. I don't have the exact numbers, but I listened to the a press release that draft Wesley Clark had regarding a Zogby poll, which showed in a kind of a bio poll, there were a lot of other positive figures, that Clark would be preferred over Bush by several points.
Right.
And
yeah,
I think
Raymond, the polls are showing that unnamed Democrat is preferred over Bush by 5 points, 49-44.
Well, that's true. I mean, Donald Duck, all he's got to say is life's got to be better than this.
There you go.
So, but I thought I'd point that out, and maybe you'd check that out, because I think Wesley Clark is probably really a strong potential candidate. We cannot afford to lose the next election, in my mind.
Yeah.
And I think we need to field the strongest candidate we can. And it's not about being against another Democratic candidate. I think he's coming off with the right tone. It's about, you know, making a choice about who we think would be the strongest leader in this situation, who would have the leadership that we need in this country.
Well, you know, Raymond, he's getting into this kind of late, and my theory on this, and I may well be wrong, but I don't think so. Having watched a lot of elections in my 52 years, my theory on this is that Wesley Clark is not running for president. He's running for vice president.
Well, I know you've expounded that before, and that's why I keep calling to tell you I think...
You think he's running for president?
I think potentially that he's running for president. He's doing a lot of background work and building relationships with people who are going to have to cough up money and support and endorsements.
Yeah. Well, people who say that point to things like Eisenhower being drafted, but the reality is that that could have worked back in the days when you had conventions where they, you know, cut deals in the back rooms. But nowadays with this primary system, well, time will tell. Well, it'll be interesting to watch, Raymond. That music means we've come up against this break here. Thanks for calling. I appreciate your call. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. You're in the Democracy Zone. Stay tuned.
To create a real democracy in this country, we need to sit down and talk with other people. Democracy begins with conversation. But how do we begin the conversation? The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom has a 10-week study guide called Challenge Corporate Power, Assert the People's Rights, to help you get the conversation started in your community. It's free on the web at WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
I am driven to overcome.
I am driven to succeed.
If you're driven, then you need a health insurance company that's driven too and knows how to take care of the self-employed, the backbone of our country. Call 877-740-7797 and have the Mega Life and Health Insurance Company provide you with affordable health insurance.
I am driven to be my own boss, to live my own life.
I am driven to work when I want to, with whom I want to.
I am driven to be the best.
And I expect the companies that support me to be driven too.
For affordable health insurance designed for the self-employed, call right now. 877-740-7797. Toll free, 877-740-7797. Mega. We are driven. Home office, Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Not available in all states. Benefits may vary by state.
You're strapped in to 700 horses of pure power.
Gentlemen, start your engines.
But you're twitching from the itching, squirming from the burning, and you've got 500 laps to go.
I should have used Preparation H.
Cool it fast with Preparation H Cooling Gel. Cools on contact for fast relief.
Lap number 25.
Oh, man, I should have used Preparation H.
Preparation H Cooling Gel. Cools on contact. Uses directed.
Thieves in High Places. They've stolen our country, and it's time to take it back. The explosive bestseller from Jim Hightower. From King George W. to his friends at Enron, they've stolen everything. Our government, our money, and our American way of life. Hightower knows we can do better, and he's back with a new book that will make you laugh, make you mad, and make you want to take action. Thieves in High Places. A ray of hope in these dark days and a roadmap back to real democracy. Available at bookstores everywhere and on the web at jimhightower.com. Buy Thieves in High Places today and help take your country back.
Xie xie is thank you in Mandarin Chinese.
Is it really, Nancy?
Ban ji la is like cool.
Chinese lesson now.
Wow, Nancy, you're so smart.
Ban ji la.
You know everything. Xie xie. I should have watched MSNBC.
I want to be just like you. I figure all I need is a lobotomy and some tights.
On the IE America Radio Network.
Animal Talk. Not your father's radio program, take 48.
Tune in to Animal Talk this Sunday for Animal Celebrity Boxing.
Boxing kicks butt.
Lightweight bout featuring Fearless Felix the Cat.
Yeah, what a cat.
And that dog on ice, Tanya Harding.
Yeah, that dog will fight anyone for a buck.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights on IE America Radio Network.
Sunday.
Show. According to Abbas, immediately after Bush promised to speak with Sharon about the siege on Arafat, Bush said, quote, God told me to strike at Al-Qaeda, and I struck them. And then God instructed me to strike at Saddam, which I did. When God specifically whispers in someone's ear, I want you to go kill those people, and they go ahead and kill somebody, what do we do with those folks? We arrest them, they are jailed, in some instances, executed. We immediately identify them as crazy. You know, Ashcroft is going to say,
wait a second, George. God has been talking to me. God told me. Not you. God told me.
These people are crazy.
They're coming to take me away, ha-ha. They're coming to take me away, ho-ho, hee-hee, ha-ha.
The Mike Malloy Show, Monday through Friday from 9 p.m. till midnight Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
So they're coming to take me away.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
I got in this song, but then what's the rush? Did I mention I never voted for a George Bush? Like half of the people, maybe a little bit more. I voted for Al Gore.
Yes, welcome back. It's Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Is the true history of conservative philosophy hostile to democracy? I really want to get into this because this is fascinating stuff. And it really helps you. You know, we're talking about fighting the water cooler wars, as it were, and to know how to speak and understand. You know, somebody said, I'm a conservative. You say, well, what does that mean? Well, it means that I'm in favor of, prayer in the schools. But I don't think that that's what conservative means. Well, it means I'm, opposed to abortion. Well, I don't think that that's what... Well, it means I'm in favor of strong defense, a strong military... Well, you know, Bob Dole called World War I and World War II those Democrat wars because they were started and fought by Democrats. Democrats are not strong on defense. They've won the two biggest wars in the history of the 20th century. So what does conservative really mean? What, you know, historically and in the present, what does this mean? Defining conservative is not as simple as saying that conservative people are against change. I mean, that was sort of the historic definition. Those people during the Revolutionary War who didn't want to fight the Revolutionary War, who thought we should stay part of England, were historically and at the time called conservatives. And the ones who wanted to overthrow King George... And King George III, interesting, we now have the third George to be president of the United States, George Washington and two George Bushes. Those who wanted to overthrow King George III were called radicals. They were the liberals of their time. So that was one of the definitions. But let's pull the picture out and get a bigger view here. We'll get into this in the next hour. This is Tom Hartman and the IE America Radio Network. Stay tuned. We'll be back right after the news.
Through a hole in the air, from those gnats in Tiananmen Square. It's coming from the field, but this ain't exactly real. Or it's real, but it ain't exactly there. From the war against disorder, from sirens night and day, from the fires of the...
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Copyright 2003.
Hi, Truth Seekers. This is Kathy Bay, producer of The Mike Malloy Show on the IE America Radio Network. I invite you to join Mike Malloy every night from 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern Time for 3 hours of passionate, progressive, political talk radio. Stay connected. Join Mike Malloy as he heats up the airwaves on the radio, the Internet, and Sirius Satellite Channel 145. Join the resistance. Listen weeknights at 9 p.m. and give Mike a call. 1-800-TALK-YES.
Yes, I'm calling about...
about the Mike Malloy program. You know, the reason I turned this man off...
Why?
...is because he sounds like an 8-year-old.
Me?
Name calling.
I'm not an 8-year-old. I'm not an 8-year-old. I'm not.
You should get somebody who at least has some intelligence.
No, don't fire me. No. I got kids in college.
The Mike Malloy Show, weekdays from 9 p.m. till midnight, Eastern Time, on IE America Radio Network.
This is IE America Radio Network News. I'm Corey Morris. As was expected, the independent investigation into the Space Shuttle Columbia disaster earlier this year places blame squarely on NASA. Correspondent Terry Moore has the story.
The 250-page final report has just been released. It comes from the Columbia Accident Investigation Board, and it accuses NASA of using flawed analysis techniques and of a lack of clear communication, key factors in a complex series of missteps that led to the shuttle disaster on February 1st. The shuttle Columbia disintegrated upon reentry, killing all seven astronauts aboard. The most likely cause of the disaster has previously been identified, a large piece of insulation foam coming off during liftoff and damaging the wing. I'm Terry Moore in Washington.
Saudi Arabia has reaffirmed its apparent commitment to combating terrorism by joining forces with the United States in an effort to tackle the funding of militant Islamic groups. Reports say FBI and Treasury Department officials will set up the special task force in Riyadh later this week. More from correspondent Nina Maria Potts.
The United States and Saudi task force will focus on the financial workings of extremist Islamic groups by gathering information from bank accounts and computer records and trying to track the flow of funding. The U.S. and Saudi Arabia fell out over Washington's refusal to publish a classified section of a congressional report into the September 11th terrorist attacks back in July this year. Saudi Arabia was widely suspected to be linked in the report to those attacks, something the Saudi government has angrily denied. And with the deaths of more than 30 people in the Riyadh bombings earlier this year, this new joint task force gives Saudi Arabia the opportunity to prove to the United States it's serious about fighting terrorism. Nina Maria Potts, Washington.
And another American soldier was killed today and two others wounded when their convoy was attacked in Iraq. The troops belong to the 3rd Corps Support Command. Central Command says the convoy was hit by what it calls an improvised explosive device.
Okay, so I'm a teenager, right? And everyone's so quick to judge me. On the outside, I may look like... But on the inside, I'm all... Because I look like doesn't mean I act that way. In fact, I'm actually involved in crime prevention. That sounds more like this. It's really a great way to convince adults that while you may be looking, you're really thinking.
Call 1-800-722-TEENS to find out how to make your community a safer place for everyone. Get involved. Get the number and call. 1-800-722-TEENS. A public service message from the Crime Prevention Coalition of America, the U.S. Department of Justice, and the Ad Council.
Witnesses say Israeli helicopter gunships today fired several missiles near Gaza City, wounding several people. The target of the attacks not known just yet, though. In recent days, Israel has targeted Hamas members in retaliation for a Jerusalem bus bombing last week. It could cost the U.S. $100 billion to repair and upgrade the nation's outdated power grid. That word coming in a report issued after the worst blackout in North American history earlier this month. The Electric Power Research Institute says the root of the power problem is long-running neglect of the grid, and the only way to fix that problem is to spend money.
Mom, see you later.
Jason, who else is going to the concert with you?
Anna and Kyle.
So you'll be home?
At 11.
Good. Make sure to call me if anything comes up, okay?
You know I never forget.
I know you don't. Now, about that music.
Yeah, isn't it awesome?
Well,
let your kids be who they are, but know what they're doing. Talk, know, ask. Parents, the anti-drug. For more information, call 1-800-788-2800. Sponsored by the ONDCP and the Partnership for a Drug-Free America.
Lots of pilots demonstrating today at a number of airports across the country. They're pushing the government to speed up the process of training more pilots to carry guns on commercial airline flights. More on the story from correspondent Allison Brown.
Transportation security officials say they're working as fast as they can to process and train pilots to carry guns in the cockpit. Officials say just under 50 pilots graduated from the program in April. Another batch went through training last month. But some of the nation's nearly 90,000 pilots say the training needs to be sped up. If the TSA maintains its goal of putting as many as 30,000 armed pilots in cockpits within the next 5 years. I'm Allison Brennan at Ronald Reagan Washington National Airport.
And if you're planning to drive anywhere this Labor Day weekend, get ready to pay plenty more to fill up your car's tank. The Department of Energy says gas prices are now at an all-time high, with self-serve regular unleaded averaging $1.75 a gallon. That's 35 cents higher than it was last year this same time. I'm Corey Morris, and this is IE America Radio Network News.
I'm Bobby Likas with today's Car Clinic Minute. Ah, the family photo album. Always keep a camera handy to capture those special Kodak moments, like senior proms, graduations, weddings, traffic accidents. Traffic accidents? Why? When I come back, I'll give you a snapshot. Want to know the secret to finding a shop that can keep your car running like new? Find the cleanest shop in town, where cleaning is top priority. Not talking about clean floors, but better shops have those too. I mean shops that have the best training, equipment, and chemistry to clean every air, fuel, and fluid system in your vehicle. Keep it clean, and you don't have to keep replacing parts. Find your clean shop at bgfindashop.com. That's bgfindashop.com. Now, don't get bent out of shape when I advise taking pictures of your car that's bent out of shape in an accident. When accidents occur, emotions run high and details are overlooked, like traffic and road conditions. And those involved don't always see or remember the same thing. What's at stake? Who pays, of course? Keeping an inexpensive disposable camera in your car ready to capture the moment is no accident. One of these pictures could be worth a thousand words and a lot of dollars, too. I'm Bobby Likas. Likas, you'll love us.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
Welcome back. Is the true history of conservative philosophy hostile to democracy? This is Tom Hartman of the IE America Radio Network, and this is the question of the hour. We just touched on it very briefly in the last hour, and I pointed out some people think that conservative simply means opposed to change, and liberal means in favor of change, but Leon P. Baradat, in his book Political Ideologies, Their Origins and Impact, which is actually one of the you know, really classic texts on this, defines four identifiable axes where liberals and conservatives occupy opposite ends of a pole, where they're, you know, the one is the head of the coin and the other is the tail of the coin. One is the North Pole, the other is the South Pole, along the same axis. And it's a fascinating definition, and I just want to share these things with you so that you are well informed and can argue this stuff and win the water cooler wars. Before we get to that, though, we've got a caller here. 1-800-TALK-YES is our number, 1-800-825-5937. And Billy in Santa Cruz is on the line. Billy, welcome.
Thank you. I wanted to give you my definition of conservative.
Great. Okay.
Conservative is a person whom, first of all, hates everything this country stands for, and by that I mean social mobility. Because the definition of a conservative is a person who will do whatever necessary to keep the power and the money in the hands that it has always been in. One more definition.
Mm-hmm.
A conservative,
sure,
is a person who looks into their own black heart and projects upon everyone else their darkest, meanest needs. A conservative is a hypocrite, a person who enjoys sex but doesn't want anyone else to. That's my definition of a conservative. Oh, one more thing. A conservative is a religious nut.
Okay. Actually, Billy, I think you touched on many of the points that we're going to get into. You did it in a little more colorful fashion.
That's
than,
what I exist for, to bring color to dry, intellectual
it.
Subjects.
I appreciate it. Thanks a lot, Billy. Thanks for calling. Okay, here are the four axes. Five axes. In liberalism, we have human rights, rationalism, equalitarianism, personal liberty, and internationalism. That sounds like a long laundry list. Let's just take these things. And in conservatism, there's an opposite each one. Let's take these things one at a time. First of all, liberals versus conservative. Human rights versus property rights. Liberals believe that human rights trump property rights. And the one of the core conservative beliefs is, and has historically been, that property rights trump human rights. John Locke, for example, originated the phrase life, liberty, and property. And it had been attached to classical liberalism. But Locke, when he talked about property, he was talking about private property being stolen from individual citizens by the king and by corporate monopolies. He was not defending the property of a landed aristocracy. But conservatives have perverted this. John Locke, of course, in 1724 or 1729, he wrote the Second Treatise on Government, which provided some of, much of the inspiration of the idea that humans have natural rights. And much of its language made its way into the Declaration of Independence, or at least the philosophy behind it. I mean, he was one of the pivotal writers and thinkers. Although it wasn't anything new, he was saying it very eloquently that the founders turned to John Locke. He said life, liberty, and property, and Thomas Jefferson turned this around. See, because what had happened, even then, conservatives like Alexander Hamilton had perverted this to make the right of property, in his mind, and John Adams, paramount over all other rights, even life itself. In other words, you can shoot and kill somebody for trespassing on your property, because property rights trump human rights. Liberals have historically been more concentrated on the life and liberty rights, for example, human rights, as being more important than property rights. And you really want to see the shift in this. Look at how Thomas Jefferson rewrote John Locke. John Locke said that we're all entitled to life, liberty, and property. And Thomas Jefferson said we are all entitled to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. They took property right out of the Declaration of Independence, or at least in that instance. So the first split that you see between liberalism and conservatism is this notion of human rights versus property rights. The second is the split between rationalism and irrationalism. Liberalism has historically been founded on what are called rationalist perspectives. That is, the belief that if we can figure out how to make things work, then that's what we should do. If we can figure out how to make a society work, let's try it. If it works, let's do more of it. If it doesn't work, let's do something else. This is a historic tenet of liberalism that goes back centuries. Conservatives, instead, tend to ground their thinking in irrationalism. And I don't mean that as a slur or a slam, but what that has meant historically is that irrationalism means that they ground themselves not in rational thought, but in institutions, in religious institutions, in this is the way we've always done it, in governmental institutions. They tend to put their faith in this is how it's been. And this gets into the thing about, conservatives oppose change. This is how it's always been. This is it. We can't improve on this. We don't believe in the possibility that rationality can make things better. The third principle that differentiates liberalism from conservatives or conservatism is that of equalitarianism versus elitism. In other words, liberals have historically taken the position that everybody at least is born with equal opportunity. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, to quote the Declaration of Independence. Whereas the conservative philosophy has always been, And it's still, you still see it being played out in the White House today, that some, well, to quote Rush Limbaugh saying that, you know, he was born to speak and those listening were born to listen or something to that effect, that some are born to govern and others are born to be governed. This egalitarian, this anti-egalitarian, elitist notion that there is a noble class. Now, within the conservative movement over the last 500 years, more or less, there's been actually a debate about whether elitism should be grounded in merit, that is a meritocracy, which is the kind that is most often advocated by contemporary American conservatives. In other words, those who are smartest should have the right to rule us. Or whether there should be a traditional aristocracy, that is, those whose families have always ruled should continue to rule, and the rationale, and you see this more in European society and British society, and the, you know, the classic Tory perspective, and the reason why they say this is the case, and it's interesting. You talk to Brits, and they, it actually, you know, they'll lay this out, and it actually starts to make a little sense, is that King Charles or Prince Charles, regardless of how smart he may or may not be, was raised knowing that part of his duty was a responsibility to the people. This noblesse oblige, this obligation that comes with nobility. The idea that this certain class, this certain ruling class, understands that they have a duty to rule appropriately. And that duty has to do not just with their duty to their family or to their country, but perhaps more importantly, their duty to their family, to their dynasty. And these are the two debates that go on. And in Ronald Reagan in the conservative movement, you saw this meritocracy. Oh, he's worked his way up to the top. He's got great ideas. He's a good speaker. Let's, you know, make him president. In George Bush, you see the landed gentry. You see the elite era. You see the classic Tory. He's the son of the former king, or the former president, in the case of the United States. And therefore, whether he's smart or not doesn't matter. Whether he has good ideas or not doesn't matter. He comes from a family of great wealth. He understands the obligations of leadership. And these arguments in code are put out all the time by modern conservatives. The fourth separation between liberals and conservatives is that liberals have historically argued in favor of personal liberty, and conservatives have traditionally argued in favor of authoritarianism. The conservatives point to the liberals and say they're advocating anarchy. They just want people to be able to do anything they want. They can, those liberals, they want people to be able to smoke pot. They want people to be able to have sex with anybody they want. It's just terrible. And the liberals look at the conservatives and say, look at those conservatives. They don't want anybody to be able to do anything that's fun. They don't want anybody. They want people to go to jail for, you know, and on it goes. And these are the two worldviews. And each one of them believes that they're right. And each one, you know, has evidence to back up their point of view. But it's basically a worldview issue of which is more important, individual personal liberty or social stability brought about by authoritarianism. And there are many people who actually feel drawn toward an authoritarian father figure kind of governmental situation. And people particularly tend to feel drawn towards this in times of crisis. Reading the history of the Third Reich, for example, is very, very enlightening with regard to this. How people can actually shift their worldview in response to world events and to a feeling of being under siege. And then the last major hallmark of the debate between liberalism and conservatism is internationalism versus nationalism. Conservatives historically have always taken the position, our country right or wrong, our tribe first. And it's not just nationalism. You find this in racism, as in those folks who argue that their race is is not only superior to other races, but that that superiority confers upon them certain rights and privileges. See, that second step is an important one. It's quite normal for anybody to look at any other group, whether it's the family next door, or whether it's another tribe, or whether it's another race, or whether it's another country, or whether it's another religion, to look at another group and say, I wouldn't want to be like them. You know, sort of an implicit, well, yeah, our way of life is better for us. But then when they take the next step and say, well, our way of life is better for everybody, that's when it becomes racism or culturism. That's when it becomes toxic and extremely destructive. And so that's the big worry about nationalism. It can also, oddly, be a worry about internationalism. So these are the main things. Now let's get into where this stuff came from and how it's playing out in today's world. What does this mean for us? We'll do that right after this break. This is Tom Hartman on IE. Stay tuned.
Mom, see you later.
Jason? Who else is going to the concert with you?
Anna and Kyle.
So you'll be home...
At 11.
Good. Make sure to call me if anything comes up, okay?
You know I never forget.
I know you don't. Now, about that music.
Yeah, isn't it awesome?
Well...
Let your kids be who they are, but know what they're doing. Talk, know, ask. Parents, the anti-drug. For more information, call 1-800-788-2800. Sponsored by the ONDCP and the Partnership for a Drug-Free America.
You check the batteries in your smoke detector and the air in your tires to protect your family. But how about your credit report? Experts recommend you check it regularly, too. And FreeCreditReport.com makes it easy. Log on today, and we'll show you how to find out online what's in your credit report. A surprise in your credit report could cause you to be turned down for a loan or a credit card. See your credit report online instantly. Make sure you get the credit you deserve with FreeCreditReport.com.
I am driven to overcome.
I am driven to succeed.
If you're driven, then you need a health insurance company that's driven too and knows how to take care of the self-employed, the backbone of our country. Call 877-740-7797 and have the Mega Life and Health Insurance Company provide you with affordable health insurance.
I am driven to be my own boss, to live my own life.
I am driven to work when I want to, with whom I want to.
I am driven to be the best.
And I expect the companies that support me to be driven too.
For affordable health insurance designed for the self-employed, call right now. 877-740-7797. Toll free, 877-740-7797. Mega. We are driven. Home office, Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Not available in all states. Benefits may vary by state.
Am I the only one who thinks it's curious that people calling themselves fiscal conservatives are chug-a-lugging federal money like frat boys binging on Ripple wine? The Reaganauts did this to us 20 years ago. And now the Bushites, some of them the same people, Rumsfeld, Wolfowitz, and others, are back hitting the federal sauce. George W. has swigged so much that he's now given America its first $2 trillion budget. How much is $1 trillion? It's a 1 followed by 12 zeros. Think of it like this. 1 trillion seconds ago, you weren't around. The USA wasn't around. Western civilization wasn't around. Only Neanderthals were around. 1 trillion seconds is 31,688 years. Bush's budget, as you would expect, is a total perversion of the priorities and values of we the people. Right off the top, he takes another $1.5 trillion from our public treasury to dole out yet another tax giveaway to the rich during the next 10 years. The Pentagon and its fat cat contractors are next in line, getting $400 billion, more than is budgeted for all the other agencies combined. This is a bonanza for the big five Pentagon contractors, Lockheed Martin, Boeing, Northrop Grumman, Raytheon, and General Dynamics. And this outlay for the war machine doesn't count actually using the machine. A war in Iraq and battles elsewhere are add-ons. As usual, corporate welfare is front and center. For example, polluters are given a pass on paying for the cleanup of Superfund sites, the nastiest, most contaminated spots in America. The Superfund law had taxed polluting industries to pay for cleaning up their own messes. But George W. felt their pain and has now shifted the cost from the polluters to us pollutees, handing the tab to us taxpayers. This is Jim Hightower saying, who's going to pay for Bush's budget binge? You and me, but especially the children who will inherit the debt. Maybe that's what he means by leave no child behind.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
Welcome back. It's Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Brain Shrub says, I can't stop looking at the picture of Bush as Christ. It's one of the weirdest pictures I've ever seen. You want to see this thing? It's amazing. The White House has released a picture of George Bush as Jesus Christ. And it's being promoted on the conservative Christian sites. They posed him so that his head was tilted just right, so that the gold curve around the seal of the President of the United States surrounded his head so it looks like he has a halo. And it's absolutely spooky. I posted it on the on our message board. You go to TomHartman.com and click to any of the links, and over on the left-hand side you'll see a thing that says message boards. And you go to the radio show message board, and you can see this picture. It is very strange. They have been stage managing this guy's presentations in ways that, you know, to have him, his photograph taken with Mount Rushmore behind in a way that makes it look like his face is one of the four faces on Mount Rushmore. And, you know, of course the aircraft carrier thing and, you know, bringing in lights from movie sets and spending hundreds of thousands of dollars and hiring top notch Hollywood people to choreograph his public appearances so that they'll make good, you know, campaign commercials. But this one, if I was part of the religious right that this thing is being targeted to, I would be offended. I would just be absolutely shocked. It is absolutely incredible. Absolutely incredible. Just go to TomHartman.com and you know, go to the radio show or TomHartmanShow.com or LiberalTalkRadio.com or ProgressiveTalkRadio.com. They'll all take you there. And click on the message board link and go to the radio show part of the message board, and you'll see this picture. So here's the core. Here's the key to this whole thing. The conservative worldview, and these are absolute worldviews that some argue are even, you know, hardwired into us by the way that we're raised. I have a feeling that it has more to do with the milieu in which we're raised. That is to do with the society, with the culture. You know, what is the world like in which we're raised? And in fact, it's fascinating. Strauss and Howe wrote this book called The Fourth Turning. It was a sequel to a book that they had written called, as I recall, The Generations of America. I'm sure that title's wrong. But anyhow, Strauss and Howe, The Fourth Turning, you can track it down. And they suggest there are four generations that continuously repeat themselves. And one generation grows up in privation and difficulty, and so they then lead to a generation that is you know, building and creating something that's, you know, solid and meaningful, and then they lead to a generation that is questioning things and reacting and protesting, and then they of course lead to a generation that is consuming as rapidly as they can and the consumer religion, and they then lead to a bust, to the thing falling apart, which brings us back to where we started. And you see this, you know, about every 80 years, about every four generations, going all the way back to the 1600s. There's been this cycle of essentially a Great Depression and a war every 80 years. And Strauss and Howe say that these four generations, each one leads to the next. Now, what they don't get into in their book is whether is which of these four generations would be more what you might call liberal and might be more what you might call conservative. And that's where it gets really interesting to me. Because Thomas Hobbes said people are essentially evil. And John Locke said people are essentially good. These stake out the two polar opposites of liberal versus conservative. Stay tuned. This is Tom Hartman. You're in the middle of the vast radical middle conspiracy. Take no imitations and stay tuned.
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament? How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements? And what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
Quest to find a Northwest Passage brought out the best and worst elements of human nature. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. The search for a trade route through the Arctic ice was one of the most determined exploration efforts of 18th century Europe. It was also one of the most irrational. Glenn Williams is the author of a new book about the search for a Northwest Passage. It's called Voyages of Delusion.
The delusion, I suppose, was that there was no evidence of any sort that there was a navigable passage through or around North America.
Williams says every expedition encountered pack ice, impenetrable coasts, and heavy fog, but no passage. But he says fictional stories of fake voyages seem to carry more weight than reality.
Accounts of them were printed and reprinted. Maps were drawn showing the alleged discoveries, which all included a short sea passage through North America. And there was nothing to support these voyages except, I think, the very human hope and expectation that if you want something badly enough, you in the end will find it.
Williams says the economic stakes for finding a Northwest Passage were enormous, and failed expeditions were greeted with scorn.
Time and time again, an expedition sets out with high hopes, and within a year, it experiences the same dismal failure as all its predecessors. The expeditions come back, there are recriminations, there are allegations, the captains have been bribed not to find the passage, and so on and so forth. So in the end, it all becomes a really rather unsavory and, I think, a rather sad business.
The 300-year quest for a Northwest Passage finally ended in the 1790s. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
Hi, Truth Seekers. This is Kathy Bay, producer of The Mike Malloy Show on the IE America Radio Network. I invite you to join Mike Malloy every night from 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern Time for 3 hours of passionate, progressive, political talk radio. Stay connected. Join Mike Malloy as he heats up the airwaves on the radio, the Internet, and Sirius Satellite Channel 145. Join the resistance. Listen weeknights at 9 p.m. and give Mike a call. 1-800-TALK-YES.
For the latest in cutting-edge technology, computers, entertainment, and much more, tune into tomorrow here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the interactive radio program with experts featuring new technology and the latest consumer electronics. Check out our internet site anytime at graveline.com and join us live this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific on the IE America Radio Network.
The best of the rest of the news. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Little boxes on the hillside, little boxes made of ticky-tacky, little boxes, little boxes, little boxes all the same. There's a green one and a pink one and a blue one and a yellow one, and they're all made out of ticky-tacky, and they all look just the same.
Welcome back. It's Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. You're in the Democracy Zone. Is the true history of conservative philosophy hostile to democracy? We really have to define, there's really three groups here, not two. And this is, for those of you who believe that you can bring people over, that you can change people's minds, you have to realize, yeah, there's three groups, not two, and some folks you can and some folks you can't. The two groups, to begin with, are the liberals and the conservatives, and we've defined these two worldviews. And then there's people in the middle who share both characteristics. And if you go back to Carl Jung, you know, the famous psychiatrist from the last century and the early part of the last century, Carl Jung had come up with this notion of judgers and perceivers, which has made its way into the Myers-Briggs test, one of these psychology tests. Judgers, Carl Jung said, are those people who see the world as black and white. Something is right or wrong, period. That's it. And they object to moral relativism and context mediated judgments and determination. They're judgers. It's this way or that way, period. It's my way or the highway. You're with us or you're against us. This is the worldview of judgers. Perceivers, on the other hand, see the world in shades of gray. They would say, well, it could be that way, but it could also be this way, and it might be sort of something in the middle. And interestingly, what Jung found was that about 80% of the population are perceivers, and about 20% of the population are judgers. Now, I would suggest to you that on the left, you are going to find judgers and perceivers, and on the right, you will find judgers and perceivers. On the left, the judgers tend to be those who are, we are waiting for the perfect candidate to show up. I won't vote for Howard Dean because he's in favor of the death penalty for people who kill cops, for example. It's really interesting. I have some friends here in Vermont who are very into the environmentalist movement. And they have not forgiven Howard Dean for the fact that 4 or 5 years ago he took the side of a corporation against an environmental group it was an Act 250 permit, you know, a building permit thing. And Dean said, well, you know, in this case, we'll let them drain the swamp and put in a shopping mall or whatever it was, a factory, I think it was. And these people still hate him for that. And, you know, in a purely environmental world, he made a mistake. But I think that Howard Dean is a perceiver, not a judger. I think he's one of these people who says, well, let's be practical. What's going to work best? Over the long term, what's going to have the best result? And I think if you look at the presidential candidates, you'll see that there are a few judgers. In my opinion, Bob Graham is a judger, and Dennis Kucinich is a judger. And there's a bunch of perceivers. I think Carol Moseley Brown is a perceiver. I think Al Sharpton is a perceiver. I think John Kerry is a perceiver. I think Howard Dean is a perceiver. Not sure who I'm missing here. Don't have a list in front of me, but anyhow. So what you find is that on the left, the judgers tend to be those who are absolutely, this is the way it is, and it's got to be pure. And the perceivers are no less liberal, but they're willing to make compromise when it's necessary. Now, on the right, you have the same thing. You have the judgers, you know, Judge Roy Moore down in Alabama out in front of the courthouse. The only interpretation of religion that works is mine, he says. The only way this country can succeed is if they do exactly what he says. And, you know, this is the ultimate judger statement, and he's got a whole bunch of judges standing there with him. But they're a minority. Because only about 20% of the people in the world are judgers, And about half of them are Republicans and half of them are Democrats, or let's say left and right, because the Greens and the Reform Party and everybody else are in there. But it boils down to this, and where I was going with this, so the point of this is that if you're talking to a judger who is either liberal or conservative, one or the other, but they've staked out their position, you're going to have a really hard time changing their mind. You're going to have to absolutely overwhelm them with data in order to change their mind, because they tend to be closed-minded. And my experience has been that arguing with conservative judges, or for that matter, arguing with liberal judges, just isn't worth the effort. I let them go. I say, let's agree to disagree. Which even that upsets judges, because it implies some sort of an acceptance of a middle ground. Are you kidding? We can't have that. Now, the conservative judges, and those who are the perceivers, those are the ones that you can win the water cooler wars with, that you can have discussions and actually change their minds. You know, if, for example, the vast majority of the right-wing guests that I have on this program, I know when I bring them on, there's no way I'm going to change their mind in a half-hour discussion. I want them to present their judger viewpoints so that I can rebut them, so that those of you who have to deal with such people in the workplace or in the world or in your families or whatever can have an example of one way, not necessarily the best way, but it's my way. It's something that I've figured out here. One way to win the water cooler wars, to have these discussions. But it's really interesting. We had this one guy on, Jim DePessio, this Republicans for Environmental Protection, and I think the guy's a closet perceiver because, halfway through our conversation, I'm saying, Jim, maybe you should vote for Democrats. And he's like, well, it's maybe I will. And it's like, wait a minute. So anyhow, here's what it boils down to. Among the judges on the right, they believe that people are essentially evil and therefore must be controlled. Now, this, in my mind, this is a very bizarre notion. Because the very people who tell you that people are evil, and this, this idea of original sin, the very people who tell you that people are evil will also tell you that everything else in creation is not. That the bunnies and the foxes will eventually balance themselves out. Things will work out. If you get too many bunnies, you'll get more foxes. You get too many foxes, the bunny population will go down. Foxes will starve off, and population will always achieve equilibrium. Things work out. The natural world, knows how to heal. It knows how to respond, assuming we don't absolutely overwhelm it. But people, because of something that a woman did, which justifies centuries, millennia of oppression of women, people uniquely are evil and cursed. Now, the judges on the left will suggest to you, and that's Thomas Hobbes' worldview, by the way. I mean, he's probably the most articulate spokesman of this. John Locke, historically, both of these guys from the 1700s, was probably the most articulate spokesman for the worldview that people are essentially good and therefore should be free. And the important thing to remember is that it was John Locke's point of view that people are essentially good and can therefore make decisions for themselves, that people are essentially good and therefore can govern themselves, that people will essentially and ultimately be trustworthy and can make the right decisions that led to the United States being created. That's why I suggest the true history of conservative philosophy is, in fact, hostile to democracy. Because democracy is based on the assumption that we the people, will ultimately make the right decisions for us. As I said, our question for this hour, is the true history of conservative philosophy hostile to democracy? Yes, in my opinion. One of the most common themes of conservatives is concentration of power, since they don't trust the masses. Look at the divine right of kings, the divine right of sons of ex-presidents, whether it's the Adams family or the Bush family. The opposition to the Protestant Reformation you know, when they refer to freedom for individuals, conservatives tend to mean freedom for those in their class, in their social class. When governments become more democratic and liberal, it tends to take power away from the elites. And those who think that the core and essential and proper nature of things is that there be an elite that runs things makes them crazy. And interestingly, the new form of concentrated power is not in democratic governments, as some would argue it was, say, during the 30s under Roosevelt. It's in private corporations. And that's why we had a conservative on yesterday saying, you know, God bless the corporations. This is a person who wants an authoritarian parent who is concerned that people are so screwed up, so essentially evil, that they won't be able to function if they're not rigidly controlled by an external authority. The elitism versus equalitarianism, the authoritarianism versus personal liberty argument. This is why conservatives still believe in strong police states and militaries to protect their property, why John Ashcroft and Bush with his warmongering are classic examples of conservative thinking. And this is the danger that this conservative thinking represents to America, to our future. Since Hobbesian conservatives mistrust the nature of humans, they mistrust the power of human reason to solve social problems. They tend to gravitate to dark fundamentalist faiths that concentrate on the evils of human nature and use threats and fear to keep people in line. Christian fundamentalism, Al-Qaeda's brand of Islamic fundamentalism, Neo-Confucianism, that also emphasized inequality. It was the source of foot binding in women and other paternalistic holds on women. And they prefer irrational solutions over rational ones. That is, institutions over individual thought. The idea of free markets, it's irrational. It's not under the control of human thought. It is outside of the control of our thought. It is therefore irrational, not rational. Tradition, preferring tradition over change, is irrational by definition. I don't mean that as a slam. I mean in the classic definition, dictionary definition of the words. And laissez-faire economics, social Darwinism, weeds out the weak. This is an irrational solution. The father of modern conservatism was Edmund Burke. He was born in 1729. He died in 1797. He was an Irish-born member of the British Parliament. And he gave conservatism its first formal philosophical base. He had a passion for order. He said that we need authoritarian government in order to control the masses. He said that the well-governed society is one where people know their place. One of his most famous quotes, which Thomas Jefferson used to throw back at John Adams, because John Adams used to quote this, was "the rich, the able, and the well-born," quote unquote, "govern, while the people of lower social rank should recognize their betters." The elite should rule, but it should rule responsibly. Here's an actual quote from Hobbes. He said, "The occupation of a hairdresser or of a working tallow chandler, that is a candle maker, cannot be a matter of honor to any person, to say nothing of a number of more servile employments. Such description of men ought not to suffer oppression from the state, but the state suffers oppression if such..." Now, get this. "But the state..." Keep in mind, almost every, with the exception of our senator from Vermont, every other senator in the United States Senate is a multimillionaire, and increasingly multimillionaires are running for the House. Let me just finish this sentence from John Locke. He said, "But the state suffers oppression if such as hairdressers, either individually or collectively, are permitted to rule," end quote. The danger of the people. 1-800-TALK, yes, is our number, 1-800-825-5937. And Hannah in Santa Fe would like to weigh in on this. Hannah, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program.
Hi, Tom. First of all, I'd like to say how much I admire your work. I'm very strongly ADHD. I'm a global executive coach. with a background as a licensed clinical counselor and also a student of international behavior and leadership.
That's great, Anna.
I want to comment on two things. I have some information about a bill in Congress on the Voter Registration Act.
Mm-hmm.
And I also want to come back to your comments about receivers and judges.
We have about 2 minutes here, so
okay.
Go for it.
The bill that's been introduced by Congressman Dennis Kucinich, was written and sponsored by Dennis, is H.R. 2239, and it's referred to as the Voter Confidence and Increased Accessibility Act of 2003 to require a voter-verified permanent record or hard copy under Title III. So people should look that up, and it's a way to really turn that around. Second thing is, I do not agree, as somebody who's trained in MBTI, Myers-Briggs, I don't agree with you about your assessment with Dennis as a judger. And part of the evidence would be that when you are talking about people it's difficult to change their minds. Dennis had a position on women's right to choose, which was changed through conversation with women. He's now solidly on the side of women's right to choose. Another example would be when he was questioned here in Santa Fe, somebody wanted to get him behind taking China to the World Court for its actions in Tibet. He very thoughtfully stopped, and he could have given an easy answer, which was, yeah, let's do it.
You know, Hannah, that music means we've run out of time. Let me just tell you, you've convinced me. I agree with you. And Louise here is saying she agrees with the same thing, and she's also trained in this stuff and is a coach. I think you're right. I was wrong. Dennis Kucinich is almost certainly a perceiver, not a judger. Hannah, thanks for the call. I appreciate you calling in. This is Tom Hartman. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
To create a real democracy in this country, we need to sit down and talk with other people. Democracy begins with conversation, but how do we begin the conversation? The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom has a 10-week study guide called Challenge Corporate Power, Assert the People's Rights, to help you get the conversation started in your community. It's free on the web at WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
Hello, Dental Group. Ms. Cole?
Uh-huh.
Sounds like a nasty toothache. Aren't you on vacation?
Camping.
Well, for temporary relief until you see the dentist, get maximum strength Ambisol.
Ambisol?
The same pain reliever in the same strength the dentist rubs on gums to start relieving pain on contact.
Oh, really?
You can't get stronger pain relief without a prescription. Use only as directed.
Ambisol.
Yes, Miss Cole. Maximum strength Ambisol. Dentist strong, so the pain is gone.
Wouldn't it be great if you could get everything you need for successful estate planning in one package? Well, now you can. The new Master Estate Kit offers a collection of legal power that would cost you $500 or more if prepared by a lawyer. Here's what you get. First, a legal will kit, one praised by nearly 500,000 buyers. Second, a living will kit that assures your wishes will be followed in case of an irreversible injury or illness. And third, a power of attorney kit that includes all the required forms. Order today and we'll include the new Family Legal Guide. It answers all your questions about small claims court, landlord agreements, personal bankruptcy, and much more. An $80 value, the complete Master Estate Kit costs only $39.95. For immediate delivery of the Master Estate Kit and your free family legal guide, call 1-800-221-0393. Pay only $39.95 plus shipping. Every kit carries an unlimited money-back guarantee. Call 1-800-221-0393 now. That's 1-800-221-0393.
Thieves in high places. They've stolen our country, and it's time to take it back. The explosive bestseller from Jim Hightower. From King George W. to his friends at Enron, they've stolen everything. Our government, our money, and our American way of life. Hightower knows we can do better. He's back with a new book that will make you laugh, make you mad, and make you want to take action. Thieves in High Places. A ray of hope in these dark days and a roadmap back to real democracy. Available at bookstores everywhere and on the web at jimhightower.com. Buy Thieves in High Places today and help take your country back.
Doug, listening to you sing Back in the Saddle Again just goes to show what happens when Nancy isn't around to rein you in. God help us and anyone else listening in at that time. I think that was very nice. I'm back in the saddle again.
There's a certain pumpkin patch charm to you when you do this.
Really?
Well, Doug.
On the IE America Radio Network.
You've got your green alligators and long-necked geese, humpty-back camels and some chimpanzees, some cats and rats and elephants, but sure as you're born, don't you forget that unicorn.
Sunday nights, please, please listen to our show, because if you don't, Mark will not stop singing. Animal Talk, Sunday nights, on the IE America Radio Network.
Show. Jody in Arlington Heights, she said, first, yesterday's show was the first time I was seriously concerned for your health. I hope you've recovered. You know, I'm fine. I get crazy. My blood pressure skyrockets. I understand that. I have a pretty good doctor who recently put me on blood pressure medicine, and it seems to be working. There have been times when I've done talk radio when I thought I was going to burst an artery, but that would make for good radio, wouldn't it?
Hey, did you hear him? My program the other night, some bitch died right on the air. There was this popping sound. Woo, man, cool. I bet Rush couldn't do that.
Sorry, didn't mean to frighten you. You're a bit late for that.
Hey, honey, just...
The Mike Malloy Show, Monday through Friday from 9 p.m. till midnight Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. HR 2239, says Hannah. We ought to check it out. Dennis Kucinich's bill to apparently solve the voting machine problem. And U.S. Congressman Rush Holt also has a bill before the House to do that. It's great to see people waking up to this. And Hannah, I think you're absolutely right. Dennis Kucinich is a perceiver, not a judger. And what Louise pointed out to me during the break and was so spot on was that I think that many of, and perhaps this is where I got my thinking from, not to justify my being wrong, because I often am, but that so many of Kucinich's followers seem to be judgers. They tend to be the people who are most often in my face with, you're wrong, this is right, like that. And now, of course, I've seen that among Dean followers. I've seen that among Kerry followers. It goes right on through the list. But it seems to me, and I may well be wrong, but it seems to me that those who are drawn to the edges of the political debate tend more often to be judges than perceivers. And Dennis has certainly staked out that position, or part of that position, among the Democratic primaries. But, just like with Is Bush a Dry Drunk, when we psychoanalyze, we do so at great peril to ourselves and to everybody else, because it's like so often just nonsense. The point that I wanted to make with all of this, and this is the really important one, is that the core issues of conservatism, and when you know this, then all of their arguments start making sense. Everything they say falls into these categories, and once you get it, it's just like, now I know what they're... And you can see the lies behind the lies when they try to put things out as if they're something else, are that property rights trump human rights, that our stuff is more important than us. It's more important to have lower taxes than to have healthy people, for example. Property rights trump human rights. Irrationalism versus irrationalism, that is, that our institutions should have power. Elitism, authoritarianism, and nationalism that that it is more important to have a John Ashcroft in charge than to have we the people who can't be trusted in the eyes of the conservatives. This is the real issue. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Thanks for joining us here in the Democracy Zone. We'll be back.
Been listening to the Tom Hartman program on the IE America Radio Network. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Copyright 2003.
Hi, Truth Seekers. This is Kathy Bay, producer of The Mike Malloy Show on the IE America Radio Network. I invite you to join Mike Malloy every night from 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern Time for 3 hours of passionate, progressive, political talk radio. Stay connected. Join Mike Malloy as he heats up the airwaves on the radio, the Internet, and Sirius Satellite Channel 145. Join the resistance. Listen weeknights at 9 p.m. and give Mike a call. 1-800-TALK-YES.
For the latest in cutting-edge technology, computers, entertainment, and much more, tune into tomorrow here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the interactive radio program with experts featuring new technology and the latest consumer electronics. Check out our internet site anytime at graveline.com and join us live this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific on the IE America Radio Network.
This is IE America Radio Network News. I'm Corey Morris. The independent probe of the Space Shuttle Columbia disaster earlier this year is now blasting years of alleged inadequacies at NASA. More from correspondent Terry Moore.
In a 250-page final report, the Columbia Accident Investigation Board cites a series of complex missteps that led to the shuttle's disintegration during reentry February 1st. All seven astronauts aboard the spacecraft perished. The report cites the space shuttle program's history and culture, including years of cost-cutting, cutting corners, and scheduling pressures. The report identifies faulty organization and analysis procedures, also flawed communications. The physical cause of the shuttle disaster was previously identified. A large piece of insulation foam broke off during liftoff and damaged the wing. I'm Terry Moore in Washington.
President Bush will be in the Midwest today. He'll be addressing members of the American Legion in St. Louis. And while he is expected to do a fair amount of cheerleading for the war in Iraq, the death now of yet another American soldier there could undermine those efforts. Correspondent Lori Yama has details.
A U.S. soldier in a convoy in the northwest Iraqi town of Hamariya has died after a bomb exploded. This brings the post-war Iraq death toll to 139. That's one more than the number of troops killed before U.S. President George Bush declared major combat operations over in Iraq. U.S. troops have stormed a northern Iraqi town trying to smash a gang they say is responsible for gun running, murder, and a bombing outside a police station that killed one American. A U.S. military officer says 24 gang members were captured, but not the gang's leader, known as Latif. Laura Iyama, Washington.
Airline pilots who say the government's moving too slowly on the flight deck officer program are holding news conferences at airports around the country today. The Airline Pilot Security Alliance says the Bush administration needs to speed up getting guns in cockpits to prevent any more September 11th style hijackings. Since the government started arming pilots following the attacks, only 200 have been certified to carry weapons on commercial flights.
Okay, so I'm a teenager, right? And everyone's so quick to judge me. On the outside, I may look like... But on the inside, I'm all... Just because I look like... Doesn't mean I act that way. In fact, I'm actually involved in crime prevention. That sounds more like this. It's really a great way to convince adults that while you may be looking... You're really thinking.
Call 1-800-722-TEENS to find out how to make your community a safer place for everyone. Get involved. Get the number and call. 1-800-722-TEENS.
A public service message from the Crime Prevention Coalition of America, the U.S. Department of Justice, and the Ad Council.
The American Civil Liberties Union and other advocacy groups say the government's new air passenger screening system violates Americans' privacy. The ACLU calls the CAPS II system a, quote, quantum leap in government surveillance. The system uses a passenger's private information to search several databases to determine if that person is a security threat. Fox News won't pursue its trademark infringement suit against satirist Al Franken. The suit stemmed from the use of the phrase fair and balanced on the cover of Franken's new book. Just last week, a judge dismissed the suit entirely, saying it was without any legal merit.
You love your car. You wash and wax your car. You talk to your car until it has trouble starting. Then you yell at your car, you curse your car, you kick your car in the tires. What you need is Die Hard Express, only at Sears Auto Center. Die Hard Express is more than a battery service. We give your car's electrical system a complete checkup. We look for common problems, and if you need a new battery, we install a Die Hard, America's most preferred battery.
Die Hard Express, Sears, good life, great price. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
Federal government's budget deficit could now top $500 billion, according to the Congressional Budget Office. The White House Office of Budget and Management had already predicted a deficit topping $475 billion, and that estimate didn't include the continuing costs for the war in Iraq. The details. And this is IE America Radio Network News. The federal government's budget deficit could now top $500 billion, according to the Congressional Budget Office. The White House Office of Budget and Management had already predicted a deficit topping $475 billion, and that estimate didn't include the continuing costs for the war in Iraq. Details from correspondent Priscilla Huff.
The numbers are mind-boggling. A deficit of more than $500 billion.
Hi, I'm Bobby Ligas with today's Car Clinic Minute. There's that clicking noise again. If it sounds like Riverdance is performing under your hood, you could be in for some expensive repairs. I'll be back in a snap and tell you all about it. We've all seen the Tornado device on TV and wondered if it really worked. I was also skeptical at first until we tested 6 Tornado units. And in every case, we got more miles per gallon and felt more power. Gasoline's expensive, so when we find something that saves us money, it just makes sense to get it. Call 800-500-8880 and order your Tornado unit today. Or visit TornadoAir.com. That click-click isn't Riverdance, but it could be a malfunctioning tappet. Like doors open and close, letting people into a club, tappets open and close, letting air into your engine's cylinders. To move efficiently, tappets use engine oil for lubrication, and there's the potential problem. Debris in contaminated oil not only causes tappets to click, it also piggybacks with the oil into all engine parts. Bottom line, expensive repairs. So before you hear your dollars clicking away, schedule oil changes regularly. I'm Bobby Likas. Like us, you'll love us.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
He's the man who uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back to our program, broadcasting live coast to coast on terrestrial radio stations, broadcasting from the depths of outer space on the Sirius satellite radio system, covering North America all the way down to Mexico, and broadcasting live on the internet from radiopower.org, live365.com, ieamericaradio.com, with archives at whiterosesociety.org. This is the Tom Hartman Program. You are in the democracy zone. Television is arguably the most potent cultural force in America today, says the mission statement of Free Speech TV, as most people receive the bulk of their information from it. Working with artists and activists, Free Speech TV fuels the movement for progressive social, economic, and political transformation. By exposing the public's perspectives to perspectives excluded from corporate media, Free Speech TV mobilizes citizens to fight injustices, to revitalize democracy, and to build a more compassionate world. You can check out their website at freespeech.org. And we have on today Shannon Service, who is both a producer and an anchor at Free Speech TV. In addition, Shannon has worked as a human rights advocate, news analyst, editor, and reporter. Shannon, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Thank you very much. It's great to be here.
I'm so glad you can join us. Shannon, tell us, give our listeners just a quick snapshot of Free Speech TV. Who are you? What are you up to?
Well, I think our mission statement sums up most of what we do. We are a nonprofit national television network. We're available on Dish Network Satellite. And we air everything from independently produced political documentaries to Democracy Now!, the national radio show broadcast with Amy Goodman and Juan Gonzalez. So we have live broadcasts and documentaries, a good mix of short experimental films, a lot of different programming that you're really not going to see on the Big Six.
Great. And now, in reading your literature, I got it that one of the things that brought Free Speech TV into existence was it's sort of a remnant of the era of the Fairness Doctrine, and that is this rule that if a cable company, and presumably also a satellite company, wants to provide television streams, multiple streams of television to viewers, they have to set aside between 4% and 8% of their total content for what they call community service programming or something like that, something to that effect. Is that correct?
Exactly. They have public interest obligations because America's airwaves are actually owned by Americans, and the companies that are leasing the airwaves, there used to be, it's certainly being phased out now, but there used to be a real strong philosophy that it's very important that the people have access to the airwaves that are actually theirs. And that, of course, is being hotly contested by the corporations who now are leasing the airwaves, and with an FCC that is very amenable to what corporations want, it's really time to launch a grassroots campaign to make sure that the airwaves that are actually the people's airwaves remain the people's airwaves, and that organizations like Free Speech TV, like community access stations, still have access to the airwaves that are ours by right.
Well, Shannon Service, this is one of the things that concerned me, was that the FCC has demonstrated their willingness to just throw overboard, you know, rules from starting in the 80s under Reagan with the Fairness Doctrine up to, you know, this recent media consolidation thing. Isn't it kind of a risky business plan or existence proposition to build your existence on this 4% to 8% rule?
It is risky, but at the same time, because the airwaves are being clogged more and more by fewer and fewer voices, people are responding very strongly to Free Speech TV and to folks like Pacifica on radio and a variety of different public interest broadcasters, because what we provide is so different. So while we are sort of dangling on this precipice of, you know, will our license be thrown away on a moment's notice, we're at the same time building support among our viewers for more organizations like Free Speech TV. You know, we really want to see a lot more nonprofit, independent television stations out there that are trying to build a biodiversity on the media rather than the monocrop that we have now. So, yes, you know, it is a little bit sketchy. You come into the office every day and wonder, you know, how much longer are we going to be able to keep this up? But the response has been tremendous, and we've actually doubled our staff just in the last year.
That's great. Now that raises another question. First of all, I've noticed that most of the broadcasting that is provided by cable companies and by the satellite companies under the banner or rubric of community service is actually Christian broadcasting. And in fact, you've got Pat Robertson, who has built a literally billion-dollar personal empire on the back of Christian broadcasting. And, you know, they're coming out, number one, they've got an enormous amount of cash. If the 4% to 8% rule were to go away, they could simply buy time, as they do on commercial radio stations all across the country routinely, and television stations. And secondly, they're coming out of a tradition where they can say to their viewers or their listeners, if it's radio, but in television we're speaking of their viewers, they can say, God said you're supposed to give 10% of your income to us. Our hand is out. Put it in there. And the And the people who are watching, of course, are believing that because that's why they're watching in the first place. And so it just makes sense to them to send in their 10%.
Right.
In this isn't the dominant paradigm, even though public television has been around for a long time. Historically, public television and public broadcasting in general in the United States was following the model of most other fully developed democracies, you know, the BBC model, the CBC model, which is that it's entirely funded by the government, it's entirely independent, we don't have to send in a check every month, and this whole thing of running fundraising drives and getting money from people has been relatively unsuccessful for the Corporation of Public Broadcasting and for National Public Radio, so much so that in the last 10 years they've basically had to sell their souls to large corporations to stay alive. Do you see this kind of barrier coming up for you?
Yes and no, because we are a nonprofit and we have a relatively small staff. We have 20 people, and with those 20 people, and also a large network of independent filmmakers and video activists around the world, we're able to maintain a 24-hour channel at very, very low cost. In fact, our annual budget of $1.7 million for a 24-hour-a-day station is about the cost, or actually it's less than a lot of television programs on the other stations. So we keep costs really low and really try to operate on a grassroots level. But you're absolutely right. And not only, you mentioned the BBC, not only is it happening here, but actually in England, an interesting thing is unfolding where Lorraine Hegesy, who is an executive at the BBC, has just called Rupert Murdoch and Fox, well, has accused them of, quote, capital imperialism. Because not only is Rupert Murdoch kind of trying to dominate the media landscape here in the U.S., but they're actually going after the BBC right now. So a lot of the issues that we've seen domestically, we're now seeing internationally. And it's not surprising because the Christian broadcasting that you're talking about and the corporatization of the airwaves is just kind of a smaller trend of what's happening more largely. You know, nothing exists in a vacuum, and we in the media don't either. So yeah, we are seeing a huge debate that's raging on the American landscape right now about the separation between church and state. Well, you can see it when you're flipping through the channels at night just on your own airwaves.
Well, it's also the rise of oligarchy, the rise of aristocracy, the whole Rupert Murdoch thing. I mean, Murdoch isn't, she's the reason that she was challenging Murdoch and calling him an imperialist or a corporate imperialist.
Capitalist
imperialist, was because his newspapers in England have been not just attacking BBC over this incident of David, what's-his-name, who committed suicide, apparently, who was found dead, let's say, in the woods,
right.
The whole Iraq thing, but they are actually taking the position that conservatives in the United States have been taking since the Reagan administration, that public broadcasting is something that the government shouldn't be funding and that they should be getting corporate sponsors. And you know, it's apparent that he's trying to do the same thing Grover Norquist suggested the Republicans are trying to do with the United States government, which is shrink it down to the size where they can drag it into the bathroom and drown it in the bathtub.
Exactly.
And I, you know, that dynamic is happening there. It's happening here. I noticed that you are on, and since you brought up Rupert Murdoch, I noticed you're on Dish TV. Correct me if I'm wrong. My recollection is that DirecTV is owned by or will soon be owned by Murdoch, and Dish TV is the competitor, the non-Murdoch one. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Okay. So have you had any success in getting on the Murdoch-owned satellite?
We haven't. It's actually quite a coup that we're on air at all, especially on a national level. So we are on Dish Network, and we're actually hoping to... we have a kind of an ambitious campaign to try to get a cable station within 10 years. But that's going to, you know, that's kind of a long shot. We're really hoping that through grassroots organizing and as our viewership builds that, and through programs like this where we're trying to build an awareness among the American population about the impact of media ownership and concentration, what that means for democracy, what that means for their own lives. And so through a grassroots campaign, an education campaign, and building our viewership, we're hoping to get onto cable in 10 years. But like I said, it's sort of a coup that we're on air at all.
Yeah, well, it's I think it's wonderful, and it's absolutely marvelous. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. It's 17 minutes after the hour. We're talking with Shannon Servais from Free Speech TV. If you'd like to be on the program today, if you have a question for Shannon or questions about free speech television, our number is 1-800-TALK-YES. That's 1-800-825-5225. 5937. Shannon, how can listeners get or viewers get your shows on their local cable systems? I saw something in your literature here about efforts that you're making to get more local cable systems to pick up your programming.
Right. We are on Dish Network, but because not everyone has access to satellite, we're also on the web at freespeech.org. And we are also working with different community access stations around the country to provide programming via community access stations. So we're now on approximately 75 community access stations around the country. I don't have the list in front of me, but if viewers do want to find out if we're on their station, they can call up their station and ask if they air Free Speech TV. And if they don't, the way that we get on Free Speech TV is when people see our programming or they see us online and they call up their community access station and say, hey, you know, there's this great organization. They're called Free Speech TV. They provide really quality programming. Why don't you show them? And then the access stations will decide how many hours a day they want to show it, and we provide it for free.
Yeah, that's essentially the same way that programs like this have been spreading. People call up their local radio stations, although we're in the commercial world, you're in the non-commercial world. They call up their local radio station and say, you know, I've been listening to this thing on the web, or I heard this when I was visiting Ralph in Alabama, and I'd like to get it on my local radio station. And you know, it's working. We've got a couple of folks in our chat room here live online at the moment as well. One says, do you webcast like IE America does? And the other says, Tom, ask her what she thinks happened to journalism in the U.S. that Free Speech TV is even necessary. Actually, Shannon, this being commercial radio, we have to take a break in about 15, 20 seconds here. So let me just prep this, and we'll get back to it. We're talking with Shannon Service of Free Speech TV. She's a producer and anchor at Free Speech TV. Their website is freespeech.org if you'd like more information. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network, Uncommon Sense from the Radical Middle. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Nice drive, Jim.
Thanks. You know, I wish my business plan was as straight. We just can't grow anymore with our current facility. I've looked at the price to build, but I'm afraid to spend the money.
Jim, I've known you since you've started your business. You succeeded because you made tough decisions and took risks.
Well...
Look, I had the same problem, but I called General Steel Corporation. The general helped me build my new office and warehouse, and I stayed within my budget. I couldn't believe the time and money I saved compared to traditional construction.
That's a steel building?
It sure is, but with the stucco and rock products provided by the general, you just can't tell. They engineered the building for this area and to fit my needs. When the economy rebounds, I'll be ready to gain market share.
Save time and money with a General Steel building. Call toll free 1-866-96-STEEL. Whether you need a 40 by 60 for under $13,000 or a 60 by 200 for under $49,000, call 1-866-96-STEEL. If you need space, you need the general. Call 1-866-96-STEEL today.
LendingTree.com presents How to Make Your Big Debt Small Debt. 1. Get all your debts together.
Okay, got them. Stacks piling. Drop.
2. Consolidate your debts into one low monthly payment with a debt consolidation loan at LendingTree.com, where banks compete and you choose the loan that's right for you. To consolidate your debt, call 1-800-555-TREE. When banks compete, you win at LendingTree.com.
Equal housing opportunity. Some restrictions may apply. See website for details.
Thieves in high places. They've stolen our country, and it's time to take it back. The explosive bestseller from Jim Hightower. From King George W. to his friends at Enron, they've stolen everything. Our government, our money, and our American way of life. Hightower knows we can do better, and he's back with a new book that will make you laugh, make you mad, and make you want to take action. Thieves in High Places, a ray of hope in these dark days, and a roadmap back to real democracy. Available at bookstores everywhere and on the web at jimhightower.com. Buy Thieves in High Places today and help take your country back.
If you're looking for the latest in cutting-edge technology and the products that everyone is talking about, tune in to tomorrow right here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Pacific. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the highly interactive radio program with experts featuring the latest in consumer electronics, technology, computers, and the Internet. We cover all things cool, like digital photography and video, home theater and audio, home automation, gadgets and gizmos, the technology of making music, computer peripherals, HDTV, DVD, MP3s, car audio, navigation and security, and lots more. If it draws current, we talk about it. Let us bring you into tomorrow. Check out our website anytime at graveline.com and join us this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific, here on the IE America Radio Network.
The chance to date Anna Nicole Smith, would you?
I found her appealing a few years ago, but there were things about her that intrigued me. That's all. I mean, I don't always get intrigued
by
them.
I just can't believe you, of all people, would choose a date based simply on the physical.
Are you kidding? I hate to disappoint you.
You're a dirty dog.
On the IE America Radio Network.
Mike Malloy is rational and, you know, I mean, whatever.
You want me fired, too?
I mean, I hate the guy. And
you hate me?
True.
You hate me?
Why not
me?
Put something on that says he's a great goof liberal?
Goof?
You know, I just can't believe it.
The Mike Malloy Show, weekdays from 9 p.m. till midnight, Eastern Time, on IE America Radio Network.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
Yes, welcome back. It's Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Dish Network Channel 9415 is where you'll find Free Speech TV. We're speaking with Shannon Service, who's a producer and anchor at Free Speech TV. In addition, she's worked as a human rights advocate, news analyst, editor, and reporter. Freespeech.org is the website. And Shannon, we were talking just before the break there about has the state of journalism in America deteriorated to the point that Free Speech TV is necessary? Another person on the message board asked, is Greg Palast right when he says investigative journalism in the United States is dead? And Z-March Hare says, why is the government-supported press in the U.K. more willing and capable of going toe-to-toe with the government than the private press here in the U.S.?
Oh, my gosh.
I think it's kind of all rolls into one issue.
Absolutely, they do, and those are tremendous questions, and we could do a whole show just on each one of them.
Well, unfortunately, we've only got about 4 minutes.
Right. So briefly, I think that investigative journalism is certainly on life support. I don't know if it's dead. There might be time to revive it. But a lot of the investigative journalism that we see is actually coming out in magazines like Hustler, which really shows the state of investigative journalism and who's supporting it. In this country.
Well, let me just interject, Shannon. Larry Flint was doing exposés of the tobacco industry back before he got shot. In fact,
right,
there are a lot of people who think that he was shot by the tobacco industry.
And I applaud them for actually taking a stand. But really what it comes down to is that people who are used to taking stands on the First Amendment are the only ones left who are really challenging the pushing out of investigative journalism. Investigative journalism is expensive, first of all.
Mm-hmm.
Secondly, it incurs lawsuits, which used to be fine back when we had a mentality in this country that journalism is supposed to challenge power, and we can talk about why that mentality shifted in a moment, but it has shifted completely. It's become much more about entertainment. It's become much more about what gets ratings. So if you take those two together, you have investigative journalism on one hand, which is expensive and incurs lawsuits, which can be dangerous for the parent company, and on the other hand, you have a more soundbite-oriented, commercial-oriented feel in the newsrooms across America. It really doesn't spell out very well for investigative journalism.
Right. And Zen Pickle on our message board says that if cable provider doesn't listen to you, remember your city council holds your cable station's franchise. Have you ever had folks going to their city council and suggesting that they want to hear real investigative journalism, they want Free Speech TV?
Well, that's actually our plan. As I mentioned before, we're trying to launch a campaign in different cities across the country. And what we're hoping to do is to get folks like the people who are writing in with these questions who are concerned about media, who do want to hear more investigative journalism, who are interested in more longer format looks at issues like documentaries that we air, to go to their city council members and lobby on our behalf. So that is a long-term goal.
Yeah, good. And finally, Shannon, how do you respond to those who say that the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and CNN already offer liberal or progressive television, and why we need free speech TV?
Well, first of all, I say that I believe very strongly in a biodiversity of media. So even if they were offering kind of leftist or liberal programming, I still think that there should be room in the spectrum for all kinds of different voices and all kind across the political spectrum, from left to right and, you know, in the middle and up and down. We should have what I would love to see is a real biodiversity, a real kind of sprouting up of different television stations. And that's certainly not what we have now. But secondly, I think there is this sort of myth of a liberal media that is being perpetrated largely by the right, because, you know, if you're on the right and you're looking toward the middle, it looks like it's the left. But actually, it's really not. And maybe before the 80s, we had a more leftist media when we had journalists who were blue-collar, when we had journalists who really didn't identify with government and big corporations in the same way that the sort of
But they're all living in terror now.
Right.
Yeah, they're all living in terror now of the big corporations. Shannon, thank you so much for joining us today.
Absolutely. It's been a pleasure.
I really appreciate it. Shannon Service, Free Speech TV, www.freespeech.org on the web. And this is Talk Radio for the rest of us. Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Stay tuned. We'll be back.
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament? How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements? And what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
For the IE America Radio Network, this is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm John Hamilton.
So far, Walmart has been able to successfully defeat all attempts to unionize its workforce, but the world's largest retailer may have finally run into a force it cannot overcome, the government of China. Walmart has 28 stores in 12 Chinese cities, and the state-supervised All-China Federation of Trade Unions is demanding that Walmart let workers organize. According to Chinese law, if more than three workers at any business want to join a union, the business is obligated to let all workers join. For its part, Walmart claims it has such a good relationship with its workers around the world that there's no need for a union, China included.
A Poor People's March from Mississippi arrived on the National Mall in Washington, D.C. this week, where members of the Kensington Welfare Rights Union are calling on the Bush administration to provide health care, food, affordable housing, and living wage jobs to poor Americans. The group set up a tent city dubbed Bushville, similar to the Hoovervilles of the Great Depression. The encampment wasn't popular among D.C. police, who on Sunday morning arrested 17 protesters and dispersed the camp. Sherry Honkala, director of the Kensington Welfare Rights Union, says her group will continue to protest until social services cut under the Bush administration are restored and expanded.
Now we're living during a period in history where we no longer have those entitlements, with the elimination of welfare in our country, the cutbacks in every social service program, with a focus on military spending as opposed to human needs. We're really in trouble if we don't begin to get out and build a massive movement calling for economic human rights in our country.
The Poor People's March on Washington will continue through August 29th.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Hi, Truth Seekers. This is Kathy Bay, producer of The Mike Malloy Show on the IE America Radio Network. I invite you to join Mike Malloy every night from 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern Time for 3 hours of passionate, progressive, political talk radio. Stay connected. Join Mike Malloy as he heats up the airwaves on the radio, the Internet, and Sirius Satellite Channel 145. Join the resistance. Listen weeknights at 9 p.m. and give Mike a call. 1-800-TALK-YES.
For the latest in cutting-edge technology, computers, entertainment, and much more, tune into tomorrow here on the IE America Radio Network, 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time every Sunday. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the interactive radio program with experts featuring new technology and the latest consumer electronics. Check out our internet site anytime at graveline.com. And join us this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific, right here on the IE America Radio Network. The best of the rest of the news. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. It's Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Raquel in Austin, Texas, sent me an email yesterday after we did the program in which we touched on the topic of capping medical-related lawsuits. And she says, here in Texas, the Republicans want to cap the amount you can sue for personal injuries. Of course, this is part of the national, you know, Republican agenda. George W. has said that if somebody even has years and years of pain and suffering and then dies, that they should not have to pay more than $250,000, even if it was done intentionally or maliciously. Anyhow, she says, here in Texas, the Republicans want to cap the amount you can sue for personal injuries. Do you want to know the real hypocrisy that exists here in Texas? Our attorney general, who is for this cap, I'm going to pause in reading Raquel's letter here and just hop over to a story that she sent me from WFAA-TV. The Republican candidate, this is back when they were running, former Texas Supreme Court Judge Greg Abbott. Abbott blamed trial lawyers like Watson for driving up insurance rates. That's his Democratic opponent. He said the Democrats would have a conflict because the attorney general often represents the healthcare industry. My opponent's career has been devoted to suing doctors and hospitals, said Abbott. This is the guy who's the attorney general now. The last thing we need is a fox in the hen house when it comes to protecting doctors, hospitals, and healthcare providers. While Abbott takes a swing at trial lawyers, he acknowledges he benefited from one when a tree fell on him and paralyzed his legs. Abbott, this is the current Texas attorney general who's in favor of capping lawsuits, sued the tree owner and his insurance company and reportedly collected $10 million. This is what he used to launch his political career. And remarkable. Thank you. Thank you very much, Raquel, for sharing that with us. Fascinating stuff. Michael in Regina, Saskatchewan, Canada, sent an email. He's talking about the holes in libertarian philosophy. And I think Mike makes a couple of really good points here that I wanted to share with you. He says, number one, freedom is a zero-sum game. One individual's right to own a gun, for example, means that another individual loses the right to live in a safe, gun-free society. Number two, in speaking about free markets, your guest is speaking great theory, but poor practice. The notion of free markets being the ultimate efficiency is based on economic models of perfect competition. For perfect competition to exist, every goods have to be homogenous. That is, there's no Coke and Pepsi, just cola. No, also meaning that marketing can't exist. There has to be a large number of small competitors, no large corporations. There has to be perfect information, where everyone knows everything about all products, which is impossible. For this theory of free markets to overcome all problems, you have to believe the above. And if you believe that, you should have your head examined. Perfect competition is a theoretical construct, and if you base public policy on the impossible, you will get disastrous results. Great show and great guest to have today, Tom. Thanks, Mike. Good one, Mike. Thank you very much. I appreciate that comment. I'll get to a few more of these as the week goes on. I just wanted to get back to the news here, too, in this last half hour of the program. Supermarket cashier, you just heard on the news just a moment ago that the government of China is trying to force Walmart to allow unions. This is the ultimate irony because Walmart depends upon China for the goods that they sell here in the United States. Well, it's all over the world. It's one or the other. It's either it's either the golden rule, those with the gold get to rule, or it's democracy of, by, and for we the people with a mixed market where the marketplace is regulated by we the people so that corporations can do what they do and they can do the good things that they do and they will not engage in excesses that harm people. And when we look at the opposite end of the spectrum, the end of the, you know, they've gone off the deep end and things are getting weird part of the spectrum, here's a story, Reuters story from Buenos Aires, Argentina. A city that actually I visited last year. It's a remarkable city, and they're having an incredible crisis there right now. And supermarket cashiers in Argentina are being forced to wear diapers to keep them from taking toilet breaks at work, a union says. And the supermarket chain that is doing this is, quote, backed by foreign capital, end quote, says Sandra Vareja, Mendoza's labor subsecretary. Mendoza is the state in which this is located. The truth is it's difficult to imagine a line of 20 adult cashiers wearing diapers for 8 hours, says Varela, who is investigating the matter. He says, in 17 years as a labor lawyer, I've never heard anything like this before. But apparently it's going on. This is... First of all, there is no such thing as a free market. And secondly, unconstrained, laissez-faire capitalism, absolutely unconstrained, the rule of the jungle ultimately ends up with only the predators winning. And that is not healthy for society. It's not healthy for the predators even. I mean, you have a small number of them who end up very, very powerful, but their entire industries are harmed. Look at the benefits of competition are wonderful, they say on the one hand, but it's a good thing that Microsoft has a monopoly because then we only have to program for one platform, they say on the other hand. Which is it? Congressional investigators said on Monday, speaking of monopolies, that Vice President Dick Cheney, who is still receiving $1 million a year salary from Halliburton, remember? This guy is still getting a $90,000 check every month from Halliburton. Congressional investigators said on Monday that Vice President Dick Cheney had stymied their investigation into his energy task force by refusing to turn over key documents. This from Reuters. Article by Peter Kaplan, Cheney stifled energy probe, GAO investigators say on Monday's paper. The General Accounting Office, the investigative arm of Congress, said it was impossible to tell how much energy companies or industry groups may have influenced the task force's 2001 report because the administration withheld important records. Administration officials did not account for much of the money spent on the task force and could not remember, shades of Richard Nixon's missing 18 minutes, could not remember whether anyone took official notes during the 10 cabinet-level meetings the group held in 2001, the investigators said. Now, wait a minute. These guys had a meeting. They had 10 meetings. Out of this meeting came the National Energy Policy of the United States with very specific recommendations for how many billions of dollars of your tax dollars and mine we should be giving as grants and gifts and tax breaks to the oil industry and the nuclear power industry and the coal industry and the electric generation industry in order to create more consumptive capacity, in order to import more foreign oil into the United States. They came up with this very specific plan with all these details, but they cannot remember whether anyone took notes during the meetings. Cheney spokeswoman Jennifer Miller-Wise advised critics to put the dispute behind them. Isn't this this is mind-boggling arrogance. She says, now that the courts have dismissed the GAO lawsuit and GAO has issued its final report, we hope that everyone will focus as strongly as the administration has on meeting America's energy needs. Put it behind you, boys. Get over it. Cheney won. The free press lost. The American taxpayers are going to pay the bill. Well, we do know one thing from these meetings. We do know that they did take some notes, and because Larry over at Judicial Watch, Larry Klamath, as I recall his name is, the guy whose lawsuit led to Bill Clinton's impeachment in the Jennifer Flowers case, as I recall, Larry and Judicial Watch sued Dick Cheney, and they were able to pry out a few documents. You can see them on their website, judicialwatch.org. And what do they get? Keep in mind, this meeting was before 9/11. This was like 6 months before 9/11. Before 9/11. You can see the document at judicialwatch.org as a result of this lawsuit. These guys had come up with a map of the country of Iraq, had identified all of the various oil fields, had parceled up the parts of the country which has not yet been explored, where there may be even more oil yet undiscovered than in all of Saudi Arabia. And they came up with a two-page long, fine print, like seven-point type list of potential purchasers for the Iraqi oil. And they want us to just get over it. It, you know, the hope here, folks, is 2004, November 2004. This country has so much potential. We have idealists in this nation. We have people who believe in American democracy. It's time to return them to government. If you want change, get out and vote. If you're not registered, register. Our quote for the day, by the way, today is from John Maynard Keynes. He said, "I do not know which makes a man more conservative, to know nothing but the present or nothing but the past." End quote. New York Newsday, Cynthia Needham writes an article, "Reps push," that is representatives, congresspeople, "push for federal inquiry into EPA cover-up. City officials and residents of Lower Manhattan Saturday called for a congressional investigation." I don't think you'll see much about this on faux news. They're too busy covering the Ten Commandments. "A congressional investigation into the White House's role in the Environmental Protection Agency's alleged air quality cover-up after September 11 and demand a proper cleanup of the area." Representative Gerald Nadler, maybe it's Nadler, I don't know, Democrat from Manhattan, among others, are very upset about this report that was just issued by the agency, the EPA's Inspector General. This is within the EPA itself. Their head cop looked at their behavior and concluded that the White House had influenced the EPA to downplay concerns. I'm reading here from Cynthia Needham's article. "To downplay concerns about air contaminants in the days immediately following the World Trade Center disaster." Nadler says in some ways he was not surprised by the report. When the air surrounding Ground Zero was given a clean bill of health in the weeks after the reports, he said his office was so skeptical it arranged for its own assessment. Quote, "The testing showed high levels of toxic contamination in indoor spaces and apartments in Lower Manhattan. We gave this information to the EPA, and the EPA hid it and lied about it and continues to this day lying about it, apparently on the instructions of George Bush's White House." End quote. Nadler added, "The White House and EPA officials have blood on their hands." This, I think, is why a good friend of mine, a former official in the Clinton White House, made the comment to me the other day that they're starting to get it in the Democratic Party that there's blood in the water. It's not just the blood on the hands of the EPA. It's that George Bush has been wounded, and he has been wounded by his own behaviors, his own lies, his own pursuit of a destructive, disgraced, failed conservative agenda that seeks to turn America back to that 20-year period of the Gilded Age, the 1880s, when the robber barons ruled and everybody else trembled, when unions were busted up with clubs and axes, when people were literally starving to death in the United States, when people worked 60, 70, 80-hour weeks and still ended up owing their souls to the company store. This conservative philosophy espoused by the multimillionaires on the air from Faux News and Excellence in Broadcasting and whatnot. This tragic, pathetic, radical, self-serving agenda. It's time for a change. We need to create an initiative that provides an incentive for people and corporations to behave in a humane fashion. The liberal ideal. A movement that will pioneer peace, that will be passionate and challenging to citizens. And well, here's another example of how the cons have snatched this country and held it hostage with a gun to our heads for 30 years now over an issue. I mean, literally for 30 years, the majority of Americans have been saying, we are tired of we're tired of 20-30% of our health care dollars going to insurance companies. And now comes this article in the New England Journal of Medicine. Again, you won't see this on Faux News, I'll bet. 31 cents of every health care dollar spent in the United States goes to pay administrative costs, and that doesn't include the 10 to 15 cents out of every health care dollar that goes as profit. So here we have 46 cents out of every health care dollar being sucked up by these corporations. We are paying, you and I, and this is for each American. Now keep in mind, for each American, there's just short of 300 million of us Americans, as I recall. There's only 100 million of us working. So you can triple this number for every person who's working. And, of course, it's 3 million fewer than it was when George W. Bush came into office. We are spending $1,059 for every American on the salaries of health plan, hospital, physician office, billing specialists, compensating doctors for time spent handling paper, for the overhead of this system. $1,059 per American just for the overhead, and we're paying another $150 to $150 per person per year in America for profits to this industry. $1,000, $1,500 per person. In Canada, they pay $300 per person. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network, where democracy is still alive and well. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
To create a real democracy in this country, we need to sit down and talk with other people. Democracy begins with conversation. But how do we begin the conversation? The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom has a 10-week study guide called Challenge Corporate Power, Assert the People's Rights, to help you get the conversation started in your community. It's free on the web at WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
Mom, what's wrong?
My knees are killing me. I shouldn't have jogged this morning.
Today's my party. You gonna be okay?
I should be. The party's hours away.
And we have tons to do.
The moment of choice, Tylenol or Advil. Which works better to get you through the day? Truth is, Advil can give you longer-lasting relief, better relief than Tylenol for tough muscle aches and pain. And Advil is gentle on your stomach.
Mom, you look like you're having fun.
I really am.
For better relief, advance to Advil.
You're strapped in to 700 horses of pure power.
Gentlemen, start your engines!
But you're twitching from the itching, squirming from the burning, and you've got 500 laps to go.
I should have used Preparation H.
Cool it fast with Preparation H Cooling Gel. Cools on contact for fast relief.
Lap number 25.
Oh, man, I should have used Preparation H.
Preparation H Cooling Gel. Cools on contact. Uses directed.
I am driven to overcome.
I am driven to succeed.
If you're driven, then you need a health insurance company that's driven too and knows how to take care of the self-employed, the backbone of our country. Call 877-740-7797 and have the Mega Life and Health Insurance Company provide you with affordable health insurance.
I am driven to be my own boss, to live my own life.
I am driven to work when I want to, with whom I want to.
I am driven to be the best.
And I expect the companies that support me to be driven too.
For affordable health insurance designed for the self-employed, call right now. 877-740-7797. Toll free 877-740-7797. Mega. We are driven. Home office, Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Not available in all states. Benefits may vary by state.
Show.
We are very lucky tonight to have joining us from California, Geneva, Bartkop.com's resident astrologer. Can you tell us anything about George W. Bush's chart?
There was a lot of stuff in his chart. He's got a lot of aspects on his own that would indicate that he would be easily maneuvered into being a puppet, a front man, or people who have more of a scheme in mind like that.
He is a very weak man when you get right down to it, isn't he?
Yes, he is.
Extremely weak-willed. What sort of looming obstacles might keep Bush from being reelected? Is he going to face some sort of impeachment, criminal charges? Can you elaborate?
Well, that would be nice. I mean,
it would.
If they did it to Clinton with as little as they had to go on.
Oh, my God.
Why not?
The Mike Malloy Show, Monday through Friday from 9 p.m. till midnight Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
Hi, Truth Seekers. This is Kathy Bay, producer of The Mike Malloy Show on the IE America Radio Network. I invite you to join Mike Malloy every night from 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern Time for 3 hours of passionate, progressive, political talk radio. Stay connected. Join Mike Malloy as he heats up the airwaves on the radio, the Internet, and Sirius Satellite Channel 145. Join the resistance. Listen weeknights at 9 p.m. and give Mike a call. 1-800-TALK-YES.
Hi, I'm Stephen Sack, and I host the Employees Lawyer Show on IE America Radio Network. We take calls from people all over the United States, and we help them in their job problems. So if you ever wondered what job rights you have and how to fight back, I'm the guy to call.
Listen to Stephen at his new time on Sundays from 9 a.m. until noon and rebroadcast from 9 p.m. till midnight.
For more information on my show or other shows on the IE America Radio Network, go to IEAmericaRadio.com. It's the best advice I can give.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Looking in your eyes, I see a paradise. This world that I found is too good to be true. Standing here beside you.
And welcome back. It's Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. War makes privatization easy. An Iraq labor protest is a crime. Get this. On July 29th, this was, about a month ago, U.S. occupation forces in Iraq, this is from an article that was on counterpunch.org by David Bacon, on August 25th. On July 29th, U.S. occupation forces in Iraq arrested a leader of Iraq's new emerging labor movement. We're arresting union organizers in Iraq. Why? Because they dare to organize for unions. It's a crime in Iraq under U.S. occupation to ask for union representation. On July 29th, U.S. occupation forces in Iraq arrested a leader of Iraq's new emerging labor movement, Qasem Mahdi, along with 20 other members of the Union of the Unemployed. They've created a union just to look for jobs, and that's illegal. The unionists had been conducting a sit-in to protest the treatment of unemployed Iraqi workers by the U.S. occupation authority and the fact that contracts for work... Now, this is the real issue here. And this is a huge one. And the fact that contracts for work rebuilding the country have been given overwhelmingly to U.S. corporations. Why does the United States not want the UN involved in Iraq? Because then this administration would have to pull billions back from Halliburton and Bechtel and the other corporations that contribute millions to Republican candidacies. They would have to pull billions of dollars back from American oil companies that are preparing to pump the oil out of Iraq. Because if the UN came in, they would say, if we're going to run this, if we're going to, you know, put our people in harm's way, we want to share in the funding. And we're just, you know, we're not going to share that oil. We're not going to do it. And in fact, we'll even put down a local indigenous labor movement to stop it. Thanks for joining us today. Our program was engineered by Jay Balicki in Detroit. It was produced by Louise Hartman and Joe McPherson in here in Vermont and in Georgia. Thanks for joining us today. Tune in tomorrow, same time, same place.
Exactly real, or it's real, but it ain't exactly there. From the war against disorder, from the sirens night and day, from the fires.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman program on the IE America Radio Network. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Copyright 2003.
Truth Seekers, this is Kathy Bay, producer of The Mike Malloy Show on the IE America Radio Network. I invite you to join Mike Malloy every night from 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern Time for 3 hours of passionate, progressive political talk radio. Stay connected. Join Mike Malloy as he heats up the airwaves on the radio, the Internet, and Sirius Satellite Channel 145. Join the resistance. Listen weeknights at 9 p.m. and give Mike a call. 1-800-TALK-YES.
Talk, not your father's radio program, take 47.
Tune in to Animal Talk this Sunday.
Sunday. Yeah!
Animal celebrity boxing.
We're gonna kick some butt!
Lightweight bout featuring fearless Felix the Cat.
What a cat!
And that dog on ice, Tonya Harding.
Tonya Harding, she'll fight anyone for a buck.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights on the IE America Radio Network.
Boys, come on!
This is IE America Radio Network News. I'm Erica Kane. An independent investigation of the Space Shuttle Columbia disaster blasts NASA.
In a 250-page final report, the Columbia Accident Investigation Board cites a series of complex missteps that led to the shuttle's disintegration during reentry February 1st. All seven astronauts aboard the spacecraft perished. The report cites the space shuttle program's history and culture, including years of cost-cutting, cutting corners, and scheduling pressures. The report identifies faulty organization and analysis procedures, also flawed communications. The physical cause of the shuttle disaster was previously identified. A large piece of insulation foam broke off during liftoff and damaged the wing. I'm Terry Moore in Washington.
The federal government's budget deficit may top $500 billion. That's according to the Congressional Budget Office.
The numbers are mind-boggling. A deficit of more than $500 billion U.S. in 2004. The U.S. federal government is on track to set a record in dollar amounts.